It's a mask. He's wearing a mask. It's not Joe.
Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak.
Thursday, March 7th, 2024. This is your award-winning Give Our Nation Media Assassination Episode 16 Party.
This is No Agenda.
Defeating DEI LLMs and broadcasting live from the heart of the Texas Hill Country here in FEMA Region Number 6. In the morning, everybody, I'm Adam Curry.
And from Northern Silicon Valley, where we're all awaiting the State of the Union, I'm John C. Dvorak.
Crackpot and Buzzkill in the morning.
The State of the Union. There's prop bets for the State
prop
of the
Union. Prop bets.
Yes, hold on. I wrote them down. Hold on a second. They're great. The prop bets for the State of the Union. Okay. And so a prop bet is, as you've explained to me, basically
it's a proposition.
You can bet on anything. So
here
are some of the prop bets. The length, the over-under is 69.5 minutes. That's pretty long.
I'm going under.
I would go under on that. The number of non-facts as per WAPO fact-checker blog, over-under 11.5.
This is a dubious bet.
I go under on that. I go way under on that. But here's the interesting ones. For Biden, will any of these happen? Direct mention of Trump, odds are 2-1. To misname a foreign leader or country, the odds are 3-1. To say senile or dementia, 3-1. I don't believe that.
No, I would bet against that. He's not going to. Why would he say that?
Of course. Well, I'm just, hey, I'm not betting. B, I don't make them up.
I don't know where you'd even make these bets.
I've got the link. Yeah, there's a real bet, a real betting place.
No, I'm sure they're real bets. I just don't know where you'd make them.
Online. You can do them online. To directly mention Obama, 4-1. To have a 5-second brain freeze. 5-second brain freeze, 10-1 odds. To confuse Trump with Obama, 14-1. And to confuse Nikki Haley with anyone, 20-1.
Huh.
And then most mentions, 10-13 odds on the border, 3-1 on Ukraine, guns or gun, 19-4, security, 6-1. Let me see, Biden to refer to his own or Trump's age, odds are 4-1 for yes and 1-7 for no. And then we also have prop bets on the State of the Union response, which will be brought by Katie Britt. And no one, exactly.
Should have been a bet on that.
And no one will watch. 1-1 odds on cognitive, 1-1 on radical Islam, 6-5 on Mexico, 3-2 on sleepy, communist, 2-1 odds, senile, 9-4, dementia, 11-4, woke mind virus, 9-2 odds, and Antifa, 5-1 odds. So there's money to be made. There's money to be made.
Yeah, you'd have to have the, you know, the problem with it is if you had the speech in advance, you can make these bets.
Oh, well, yeah. Yeah. And I'm at a certain point,
that's what these bets, this kind of prop bets are no good because
they can be rigged.
I mean, if I was somebody working, it was Jean-Pierre or Claude Van Damme, and I was looking, I have the speech in front of me, I would be calling my bookie.
Yeah.
And then telling Biden, make sure you don't blow this one up.
So just this morning, the most cringe thing I could have imagined our president did, he did a Zoom call. It's on the X. With former presidents in the movies.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is unbelievable.
He had on Morgan Freeman, Tony Goldwyn, Gina Davis, who also played president in the movie, Michael Douglas, and Bill Pullman, who did Independence Day. You want to hear some of that?
Yeah.
Okay, sure.
I never spoke to so many presidents all at one time. Some of you might know what a big speech like I have to do is coming up to State of the Union. Any advice you have for me in delivering my speech?
Well, sir, in my capacity as president, all I had to deal with was a meteor. One of the things that
this is Morgan Freeman, for those who can't understand.
What's
that?
My speech, too.
It's so recognizable.
Yeah, well.
Hope is the strongest force we have.
Then we get to.
It is the most useful and the most effective. My advice is just keep.
It's too long, Morgan. Tighten it up.
Telling us how you're working for us.
And
building hope. They have no script.
Mr. President, you know, looking back at my own presidency,
Does anyone know Tony Goldwyn anymore? Do we even know what he looks like?
It goes dead. I have no idea. I have to look him up to see what he looks like to even know who he is.
Let's see if we can find Gina Davis here.
And also when I do that would be ice
cream. Oh, here she is.
Do that with ice cream. I highly encourage it.
I know from experience, obviously, what a tough job it is. And, when I was...
She's talking a little bit like this.
President, it seemed like every week there was some new crisis that I had to face.
You did a hell of a job.
Thank you.
It's so pathetic. It's let's just skip to the end.
There's nothing that we can't do when we do it together.
This is Pullman.
Those are good ones. Best wishes to you, sir.
There's nothing beyond our capacity, and I believe that. Hey, come see me
at
the White
House.
I'm very
sure.
I'd love to meet you all in person. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I never spoke to so many presidents all at one time. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Bye.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
See you. Thank you.
Sad, just sad. It's sad. I mean, we used to be cool. America used to be cool. No longer. This is sad. This is not good.
That is totally pathetic.
And
but I'm sure that the left, you know, the Bill Maher's of the world are all thinking that's fabulous. At least he's going, you
Did
know.
Did you see that? That was awesome.
I have
that was
it.
Awesome. No, you don't. He didn't actually say that, did he, Bill Maher? It's awesome. It's
no,
awesome.
No, I have the his complete screw up.
Oh, okay. All right. Let's do it. Bill Maher, what do you got? Where is this from, his show or from his podcast?
It's from his show.
Mm-hmm.
It's from his show live. And he, I should set it up with, let's set it up with Jack Probiakis, whatever his name is.
You know, Persebik.
Persebik. He's at CPAC and he's just standing up there trying to be funny. And he says, this is the CPAC. This is the clip. CPAC joke, yeah, Jack.
I got you. Go.
All right. Go. Welcome. Welcome. I just wanted to say, welcome to the end of democracy. We're here to overthrow it completely. We didn't get all the way there on January 6th, but we will endeavor to get rid of it and replace it with this right here. We'll replace it with this right,
all right.
Here.
Amen. Jack should not be doing a shtick.
No. Well, he's not a comic.
No.
But what's interesting is Maher took it seriously to such an extreme that's unbelievable.
Not.
This is a professional comedian, and listen to this, Bill Maher on the End of Democracy 1.
CPAC, do you know what that is? That is the conservative. What is it?
Unfortunately.
What is PAC?
Political Action Committee.
Political Action Committee. Okay. Yeah. It's their big convention every year. It's like corporations have a big convention. They have their big convention. I made jokes about it every year. But I can't remember the last time we did. It goes way back. I remember once calling it the Woodstock for the mentally impaired. But in years past, it was like the most conservative commentators and senators and governors. And okay, this year, there's a guy, I've heard this name, I don't know who he is, Jack Probierak. He's doing sort of like a roundtable discussion, you know, it's a convention, they have these things. This is a quote, "Welcome to the end of democracy, we are here to overthrow it."
Oh, he didn't actually see it. His writers just wrote this for him, and he's too lazy to actually look at the clip. I'm already feeling what's happening here.
Completely. We didn't get all the way there on January 6th. But we will endeavor to get rid of it. Am I missing an irony here?
Yes.
Am I missing a joke?
Yes.
Or is it, as it seems now, they are saying the quiet part out loud?
Flub.
Yeah.
That they are not. This is CPAC. This is their big, this is Republican, conservative, their big convention. And you have a guy like this and the crowd is loving it. Welcome to the end of democracy. We're here to overthrow it. January 6th was good. Now we're going to finish the job. Thoughts?
It's scary.
Oh, clutching my pearls is scary.
It's scary.
It's the biggest convention in the world.
So they have. So this woman. This is more pathetic, I think, than what you played. And by the way, it wasn't ironic. It was sarcastic. But we can quibble about that later. So he has this woman on who's a lefty who end up going on. And I have a clip of her later.
What's her name?
Her name is Batya something Sargon.
Isn't she from the new? She's the Newsweek opinion editor.
Yeah, she's the Newsweek opinion woman. So she's on the show and she's dying knowing that this is nonsense. Well, the guy sitting next to her is going, "Oh, it's so scary. It's scary."
And who was the guy sitting next to her?
I don't have his name, but you know, you can look him up.
But Batya is pretty good. I've seen her before.
She's very good. And I have a clip after this clip.
Okay. All
right. But this is Bill Maher, the end of democracy. She tries to explain to him that it's a joke.
Oh, goodness.
And Maher is like, really like, well, I'm not sure.
Thoughts?
It's scary.
Bill, that was a joke about Trump making a joke about being a dictator day one in office. That is an ironic take on how the liberal
media. That was my question. Am I missing the irony?
Conservatives, I think so. Yes, it's a joke.
Really?
But, yeah, and I think more. I mean, more to the point. To you, Bill, and to
keep your day job, Jack.
Oh yeah. Okay, so he tries to save it with this quip.
With a quip, lousy quip.
This is just poor showmanship and poor televisionmanship. And he should be ashamed of himself for just blatantly walking into the studio, ready to go. What are my jokes? He's not. He's phoning it in, is what he's doing.
Because it wasn't a panel. Pro whatever his name is was standing there, you know, trying to kill time. So it had nothing to do with anything. And meanwhile, Maher, yeah, you're right. He phoned it in. Here's Batya. She shows up on Banyan's show.
Oh, the War Room. Oh, okay.
To talk about this.
Oh my God! Wait a minute. This is now a topic of discussion.
Yeah.
What goodness.
Maher's screw up is the topic.
Oh wow! I'm glad we have time on our hands.
Talk to me about being on there.
Well, I'm very, very grateful to Bill for having me, because even though I am on the left, I can't get onto liberal shows because it's kind of like that scene in Monty Python where they're like, hey, we want to join you. And they were like, well, how much do you hate the Romans? And he goes, a lot. And they're like, right, you're in. It's the same thing with Trump. If you don't hate Trump, they will not let you on, even if you want to tell them, hey, here's how the Democrats could get the working class back. They don't want to hear it.
So that was the point.
Well, and that's good. I mean,
you have to be a hater.
Yes. Yes.
To get into these gigs. And she's like irked because she doesn't get booked on anything. And she's very personable. She's quite funny. She goes on and on about a bunch of things. I could have played more clips of her.
Yeah.
Because she's good. But she is worried about the Democrats being out to lunch.
I had a supercut somewhere. Let me see. What is this? Let me just see if it was, I think it was supercut. I'll find it. But the hate is strong. It's quite insane. I have MSNBC from Super Tuesday and a couple of clips if you want to laugh.
Yeah, I was going to get these. These are funny.
Here's Rachel Maddow.
Remarks have just started for former President Donald Trump. Let's listen in.
And nobody thought a thing like this would be possible. We wouldn't have Russia attacking Ukraine. We wouldn't have Israel being attacked. Iran, as you know, was broke when I was running things. They were broke. They didn't have money for Hamas. They didn't have money for Hezbollah. We had no inflation. Inflation is destroying the middle class. It's destroying everything. Inflation, if you look back over the history, hundreds of years back, it's called a country buster. And that's what it's doing to our country. What's happened with inflation has been unbelievable. A lot of people say, a lot of experts have said the stock market's the only thing that's doing well, and that's doing well because our poll numbers are so much higher than
it's your guidance. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So I'll just do a couple of quick Trump clips, and then we'll have Maddow come back in, because, of course, he has to interrupt. Here he is on the border.
We had the safest border, the best numbers we've ever had, and now we have the worst numbers probably in the history of the world. It's sad to see what's happening to our cities. Our cities are being overrun with migrant crime, and that's Biden migrant crime. But it's a new category of crime, and it's violent.
It's a new category, Biden migrant crime.
Where they stand in the middle of the street and have fistfights with police officers, and if they did that in their countries from where they came, they'd be killed instantly.
On the spot.
They wouldn't do that. So the world is laughing at us. The world is taking advantage of us.
Well, no, the world is not laughing. The world has the exact same problems. Here he is on our energy independence.
3 years ago, we were at a level. We were energy independent. We were going to be very shortly energy dominant. And today we're getting oil from Venezuela. Can you believe it? And we're doing numbers on that oil. You know what we're doing? We're refining the oil. We have our refinery for that oil. It's really, I call it tar. It's not oil. It's terrible. We have real stuff.
Wait a minute. Is he saying we're refining the Venezuelan oil, which is tar?
That's what he said.
Is that true? I mean, you know a lot about this stuff.
The Venezuelan crude. I'm not sure.
Is it really thick tar?
It would be a heavy style, a heavy crude is possible. I don't know. I'd have to look it up.
Let's go. Now, this is where it just starts to irk Rachel, because now he's talking about a fair and free press.
We need a fair and free press. The press has not been fair, nor has it been free, but maybe someday they will be. They're being beaten up pretty badly. People aren't trusting them. They're not believing them. And really, it's a very important factor. The press used to be the policeman. It used to police our country. Now nobody has confidence in them, and we have to get that confidence back. It's so important for the success of our country. So important.
Yes. All right. Here we go.
I read an article yesterday where it said this is one of the finest run campaigns that anybody has ever seen. That's uh-oh. Pretty good, uh-oh. Right?
Rachel, get in there.
That's pretty good.
Rachel, you got to get in there, Rachel. This is going to
and we have
out.
No choice.
He's lying.
Yeah.
He's lying.
You know, it is okay. I will say that it is a decision that we revisit constantly in terms of the balance between allowing somebody to knowingly lie on your air about things they've lied about before and you can predict they're going to lie about. And so therefore it is
what? Just,
it's irresponsible to allow them to do that.
What? Irresponsible.
It's a balance between
balance.
Knowing that that's irresponsible to broadcast. What? And also knowing that as the de facto, soon to be de facto nominee of the Republican Party, this is not only the man who is likely to be the Republican candidate for president, but this is the way he's running.
So then sitting on the panel.
But wait.
Yes.
Did she say specifically what was the lies? He's just generalizing.
Well, because now we go over to the panelists next to her. The favorite of the trading floor boys over there at Goldman Sachs, Stephanie Ruhle. She didn't go to J school. She was a trader, and then she rose through the ranks at Goldman, and she'll fact check him.
Well, here's how we'll balance it.
Yeah.
Why don't we fact check the hell out of him?
Yes,
yeah,
and we do that after the fact, and that is the best remedy that we've got. It does not fix the fact that we broadcast it.
But it's
honestly.
Stunning that he's saying these things and people are hearing it. Let's just go through it, right? That we have the most devastating economy. Are you kidding me? We have had the best economic recovery of any country in the developed world. He's telling an audience right there, oh my goodness, the paltry oil production. We're producing more oil today than we ever have in the history of our country. Think about the American Rescue Plan, the infrastructure plan. We have created more jobs, 3.2 million more jobs than we had pre-pandemic. The problem that we do have is inflation. And so what Donald Trump does is prey upon the fact that people don't necessarily feel good and life's expensive.
Oh, the horrors. He plays on the fact that people don't feel good and life's expensive, but everything else is great. It's great.
It's just, well, what did he, did he say that we don't have high oil production? I mean, what was the lies?
Well, I mean, you're.
All he said, the only positive, the only factual thing that he referred to was the high inflation.
Yeah.
and people don't feel good about things.
Yeah, well,
so where's the fact check? You got to fact check him.
Yeah, but that's the whole problem. It's like he's saying things that are hitting home. Turn him off. That's it. It's so obvious. I mean, I think it's obvious to most people. Let's go back to the...
But before we continue, there's a couple other things along this line I want to say, at least discuss.
Mm-hmm.
So I got an article. I sent it to you to put in the show notes. It's written by a writer in the UK called Andrew Orlowski, who wrote for The Spike. He writes for The Telegraph. And he goes on about how the BBC and these people in Europe, especially in England, are excusing Trump's victory.
Yes, exactly.
They're coming up with it's like pre-crime.
Yeah.
And it's going to be all about misinformation and disinformation, and they're going to go on and on about it. And he cited an example, which are these photos, I guess. I have not seen him until I read his article.
I have a clip,
of Trump with black people that have been all AI pictures.
Yes, I have a clip here. Hold on a second.
Have you seen these? You seen these before?
Yeah. Well, this is part of the, I think it's part of the Swift op, because they're also now saying that Russia, here, let me get the article for you. Putin plans, let me see who wrote this. New York Post, okay. Putin plans to weaponize deepfake porn against Western democracies' female leaders. Huh? Swift op?
Already brought in Swift, and then you say female leader, so I'm already chuckling.
Yeah, so here's the girl from the Young Turks who is reading this
Anna.
Anna, yes, reading this BBC article.
AI-generated images depicting Donald Trump with excited black supporters are spreading across the internet like wildfire, according to a new BBC investigation. Now, since they're AI images, obviously they're not real, they're not authentic, they're not depicting something that actually happened. And if you're tempted to believe that Russia or some other nefarious foreign actor is behind the misleading images, the BBC looked into that and found that American Trump supporters are actually the ones behind the, dishonest AI images that are spreading.
Well, that's your off message, girl. Putin.
Yeah. Wait a minute. She starts off in one direction.
Yeah, I know.
Putin. And then she drifts over to something. I mean, can't they keep their focus?
No, ever since Chunk just went complete nut job, it's a rudderless ship over there. Now, of course, we have more insane stuff, such as the Supreme Court's decision, unanimous. It was not even unanimous. It was the court decision. Our constitutional lawyer deconstructed it for us. So that's 9-0, no dissent, Colorado has no right to take the president off of the ballot. They were very careful, by the way, in what they said, because here it is. They did not decide whether Trump, of course, actually engaged in insurrection. They took a quick little off ramp, a simple one, and they said, hey, states lack the power to use Article 3 against federal office holders. That's really the whole thing.
Yeah.
And of course, it was hilarious to see that the document that was sent out. I guess it was a Word document where they had track changes and they forgot to remove those. And so everyone had their panties in a bunch.
That had to have been done on purpose.
Most definitely, because it was so.
Most definitely.
Not just so. Exactly so is what I would say. It was Sotomayor who appeared to have written a dissenting opinion in the document, but that was then track changes turned it into what do you call it? Acurare, I think is the term. Let me see. It's the court. Yes. Per curiam. There you go. Hey, I speak Latin. Per curiam, i.e. the whole court decides and there was no dissent. But I agree with you. I think that was left in there purposely. You know, sure. It's a little virtue signal by Sotomayor or someone, whoever's doing that stuff. But here's Joy Reid. Always fun to listen to her opinion on stuff.
I do have to go to you first, Melissa, because I'm sorry, but I don't speak Supreme Courtese. But all I read was shade and more shade from your former boss, Justice Sotomayor, and her colleagues. They opened in their what felt like more of a dissent, honestly, than a concurrence, in which they said, y'all did too much. You just had to say states can't enforce Section 3 and leave it there, but you had to keep going. You felt like you had to tell people how to enforce Section 3. You felt like you had to instruct Congress. Did you read that as shade as I did?
I think it was shade all the way down, Joy. And more than that, I think this was nominally a concurrence, but it had real big D energy, big dissent energy.
Big D.
Oh, my God. All right. I'm giving you clip of the day for catching that.
Oh, man.
Big D energy. Clip of the day. Wow. 20, what an asshole.
26 minutes into the show, we have clip of the day, ladies and gentlemen. Does it get any crazier? I mean, I didn't even clip Mika this morning. Oh, man. Or Joe, who says this is the most cogent Biden ever. I mean, these people are going nuts.
Anyway. Well, I do have a 3x3 about this since you brought it up.
Oh, well, and now it's time for a 3x3.
Go right into it, baby.
Experiment by JCD.
A 3x3.
Comparing stories from ABC,
CBS, and NBC.
The never-ending 3x3.
That's right, 3x3. It's not just an experiment. We actually delve in. JCD gets you clips, and we check out the big news stories from the three trustworthy news networks.
Yeah, there's not as much of the craziness like you just heard that you got the clip of the day for. So let's start with ABC.
Tonight, for the first time after months of missile attacks on cargo ships, the Iranian-backed Houthis have left.
I'm sorry. That's the wrong ABC clip. This is your ABC clip.
For the Supreme Court, a rare moment of unanimity. All nine justices, so often divided in major cases, declaring as one that individual states cannot ban Donald Trump from the presidential ballot under the insurrection clause of the Constitution's 14th Amendment. The court did not address the issue of whether Trump actually engaged in insurrection, but declared that the responsibility for enforcing that section of the Constitution rests with Congress and not the states.
They worked long, they worked hard, and frankly, they worked very quickly on something that will...
long, hard, but quickly.
be spoken about 100 years from now and 200 years from now. Extremely important.
That's right.
Courts in three states, Colorado, Maine, and Illinois, have ruled that Trump should be banned from the ballot because of his actions on January 6th and in the weeks before under the 14th Amendment's command that no one who has taken an oath to support the Constitution and then engaged in insurrection can hold public office afterwards. During oral arguments last month, liberals and conservatives on the court voiced sharp skepticism of what Colorado did.
Whoa, what's going on over there at ABC? Sharp skepticism!
Engaged in insurrection can hold public office afterwards. During oral arguments last month, liberals and conservatives on the court voiced sharp skepticism of what Colorado did.
Puker.
I think that the question that you have to confront is why a single state should decide who gets to be president of the United States.
Okay.
Today, the justices pointed to the potential disruption that could happen if some states disqualified Trump and some did not, all using different standards and procedures. To disqualify insurrectionist candidates, the court ruled Congress must first pass a law spelling out how. Justice Amy Coney Barrett also wrote separately, agreeing with the liberals that the majority went too far, but urging her colleagues to turn the national temperature down, not up. Our differences are far less important than our unanimity, Barrett wrote. All nine justices agree on the outcome of this case. That is the message all Americans should take home.
Oh, well, except for the puking, that was reasonably on point.
Yeah, I think so. Didn't have some of the Dana Bash on, I guess it was MSNBC when she goes on. It's a sad day for America that they did the right thing.
Well, did you see, I mean, Keith Olbermann, unfortunately,
he went off the rails.
But he didn't do any video. So
he can't even do video himself. He spits too much on them. The screen, the lens gets all spitty. So let's go to NBC.
Tonight, the U.S. Supreme Court dealing a final blow to states trying to ban former President Trump from the ballot. In a unanimous decision, the justices effectively leaving it up to voters to decide if the former president returns to the White House. Mr. Trump praising today's ruling.
The voters can take the person out of the race very quickly, but a court shouldn't be doing that.
The justices rejecting a Colorado state court's ruling finding Mr. Trump ineligible to be president under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, a largely untested clause of the Constitution passed after the Civil War.
Isn't it a completely untested clause? Has it ever been tested?
I don't know.
Disqualifying those who engage in insurrection from holding public office again. An elections official in Maine and a judge in Illinois later doing the same, banning the Republican frontrunner from the ballot in those states in light of his actions on January 6. Today's ruling from the high court now ending all similar efforts to disqualify Mr. Trump from the ballot.
While most states were thrilled to have me, there were some that didn't, and they didn't want that for political reasons.
The justices today saying that patchwork of different rulings across the country cannot stand, finding responsibility for enforcing Section 3 against federal office holders and candidates rests with Congress and not the states.
I've got to say, boring read.
But at the same time, the three liberal justices accusing their conservative colleagues of going too far.
Too far.
By ruling Congress must enact new legislation in order to ban a presidential candidate.
Why is that too far? I don't understand. I mean, that's why is that too far? Why is it too far to have Congress do that? I mean, isn't that exactly what the Supreme Court said? Why is that going too far? I don't
get it. It was confusing the way she presented it.
Writing, this ruling will make it harder to bar an oath-breaking insurrectionist from becoming president.
You forgot rapist.
Conservative Justice Barrett cautioning this court should turn the national temperature down, not up.
Thank you, Barrett. All right. Boring read. NBC in trouble as far as I'm concerned. That's not
NBC's got, yeah.
That's not NBC. Reporting. That's factual and it's boring.
That was pretty bad.
Yeah,
that was a bad report.
How does CBS do now that the Pixie Girl
is
no longer?
Well, CBS is, you know, they're, I don't know. Let's see.
A crucial decision today with sweeping political consequences.
Sweeping.
The high court
sweeping.
Ruling that former President Donald Trump
Goodness.
Cannot be removed from Colorado's ballot due to the state court's view that he stoked the January 6 insurrection.
You cannot take somebody out of a race. The voters can take the person out of the race very quickly. But a court shouldn't be doing that.
With this ruling, two other states also had their efforts to remove the former president stall. Three justices, in a separate concurring opinion, said allowing the Colorado measure to go forward would, we agree, create a chaotic state-by-state patchwork. Amid a tense political landscape, Justice Amy Coney Barrett also urged Americans to see unity from the unanimous decision.
Let's hold hands.
Writing, in this circumstance, writings on the court should turn the national temperature down, not up. Colorado's Democratic Secretary of State offered sharp criticism of the decision.
I do believe that states should be able under our...
This woman, did you see her eyes?
Oh, she's a psycho.
Decision.
I do believe that states should be able under our Constitution to bar oath-breaking insurrectionists.
The ruling comes a day before.
This is now the meme. Oath-breaking insurrectionists.
Ooh, I like oath-breaking.
Oath-breaking. She forgot rapist.
Constitution to bar oath-breaking insurrectionists.
The ruling comes a day before Super Tuesday, the biggest primary election day of the season, when voters in 15 states, including Colorado, head to the polls. And Trump's legal hurdles continue to pile up as the Supreme Court weighs another decision next month.
I hope that the justices, because they'll be working on some other cases, but one in particular, presidents have to be given total immunity. They have to be allowed to do their job.
Later this month, Trump will also spend 6 weeks in court, where he is charged with falsifying business records related to hush money payments to a porn star.
Oh, God. Okay. Since that was so boring, not your fault. Not your fault. Yeah.
Be the little point in there that CBS says they teed the ball up for the next round,
of course,
which was the immunity case, which the other two networks did not do. And Dershowitz, who comes on every show he can get on, and the right-wing shows now almost exclusively, in fact, exclusively,
yeah,
has said, he comes on, he spikes, I don't have these clips, he spikes the ball, said, I predicted 9-0. I mean, he's getting really, with his new podcast, he's becoming a personality.
The Dersh test.
The Dersh show. And so he spikes the ball. And then he says, and then I believe that it will be a 6-3 on the next one. And which I think he's right, because they're going to, because these liberal judges have felt that they're getting flack. Why didn't you do anything? You know, they get pushed around a lot. And so they're going to probably go against the immunity thing, which
is again stupid, is stupid, because immediately everyone goes to jail.
Everybody goes to jail.
Yeah.
And I would say if they better start thinking about it, and somebody's going to have to start bringing this up besides me, which Obama.
Yeah, here we go.
Is the guy who's killed 4 Americans, extrajudicial murder of 4 different Americans. He should go to jail. He should be definitely go to jail. And there's other examples that people use, but no one wants to bring up this Obama one.
And if you're not down with that, we got 2 words for you.
Predator drones.
I don't know where that came from. Okay. Let's just do some elections. I know you have a report. It was Super Tuesday in the United States, where everybody goes and votes for local elections and some primary stuff. But we had some fun. There was fun. Certainly in North Carolina.
The North Carolina race for the governor's mansion is going to be among the most competitive. And now CNN is projecting that the Republican candidate in that race is going to be Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson,
a favorite among evangelicals, becoming the first black gubernatorial nominee in North Carolina.
Those who want to go into the mud, feel free. Where we're going is we're going towards the substantive issues that all North Carolinians face.
This guy, did you see this guy?
Oh, I've been watching this guy for a month.
Here, I got a supercut. Short.
He's got some great material, I'll tell you.
He does.
Ain't but 2 genders. Ain't nothing but men and women.
He says God called on men to lead, not women.
Called to be led by men. When it was time to face down Goliath, sent David. Not DeVita, David.
There's no reason anybody anywhere in America should be telling any cop about transgenderism, homosexuality, any of that filth. And yes, I called it filth.
We could pass a bill saying you can't have an abortion in North Carolina for any reason.
He says the civil rights movement in the 1960s was, quote, crap, and that Martin Luther King was a communist.
Robinson posted the movie Black Panther was, quote, created by an agnostic Jew to pull the shekels out of your Schwartz pockets, using the Yiddish words for money and black.
He referred to the victims of the Parkland school shooting as spoiled little bastards.
He says the moon landing in 1969 may have been fake. He also says there is a secret ruling cabal that is part reptile.
And said that Beyonce is satanic.
The long leg Mac Daddy!
Yeah!
Oh, well, they left out the funniest bit. He goes into a reparations.
I don't have that one.
The reparations one. Thing, he says blacks should be paying reparations to whites. No. And his rationale is really interesting.
Oh, man. Oh, I'm doing a show with Mo next week. Maybe we can get into it. I'd love to hear his take on that.
But you've got to be a big fan of the guy.
This is fantastic, of course.
Because of the moon landing,
for the moon landing alone. I came for the moon landing and stayed for the 2 genders. You bet. And meanwhile, Rolling Stone trying to amp it up a bit, to coin a phrase. Headline, exclusive, Trump's White House was awash in speed and Xanax. Under Trump, the White House medical unit was like the Wild West, and staffers had easy access to powerful stimulants and sedatives, sources tell Rolling Stone. You know what? I think all of Washington, D.C. has access to powerful stimulants and sedatives. They're all on drugs.
Yeah, of course they are.
All of them. All of them.
I don't get the point of this Rolling Stone piece.
Well,
are they trying to make it to lessen the blow about Hunter? Or
no.
Joe gets shot up just before his
speeches.
That's what it is. Would be interesting today.
Yeah, but you say being yourself. Exactly. Because, you know, Joe's going to get it all jacked up tonight. Man. Well, if it's the real Joe, we don't even know. We don't even know if it's the real Joe. More politics here. Big Mike says, no way, Jose.
Former First Lady Michelle Obama once again shutting down speculation about whether she would jump into the race for president if needed. The former First Lady making it clear, as she has before, she supports President Biden and Vice President Harris and will not be running for president. Her spokesperson says she's expected to act as a campaign surrogate for President Biden and Vice President Harris.
Yeah, and I tried to register BigMike2028.com, and that was already taken. So I feel gypped. I feel gypped.
Probably by one of our producers.
No doubt. No doubt. So I'll tell you my experience here. Voting.
I do have the Nikki Haley quitting clip, which is part of the Super Tuesday. And I also have my...
Yes,
my
that's why I'm bringing
discussion
it
of the... I voted on a Dominion machine.
Yeah, well, let's do your Nikki Haley quits poorly, and then I have two quick Nikki Haley crowd responses.
As Nikki Haley drops out without endorsing former President Trump, both Trump and Biden are now courting Haley's voters. Trump has also challenged Biden to a debate anytime and anywhere. NTD's White House correspondent Iris Tao has more.
All right, NTD.
Both Trump and Biden are now directly asking Nikki Haley supporters to join their camps, though their messaging is quite different. Trump, while saying that Biden's the enemy and that he's inviting all Nikki Haley supporters to join the MAGA movement, also criticized Nikki Haley, saying she trounced on Super Tuesday and that a lot of her supporters and donors were actually Democrats. President Biden, meanwhile, praised Nikki Haley in a Wednesday statement, saying she was willing to speak the truth about Donald Trump, adding that Nikki Haley supporters have a place in his campaign. Meanwhile, both Trump and Biden's appeal came after Nikki Haley on Wednesday morning dropped out of the race, congratulated Trump, but stopped short of actually endorsing him.
No.
Here's what Nikki Haley was saying. Watch.
Watch.
I congratulate him. It is now up to Donald Trump to earn the votes of those in our party and beyond it who did not support him. And I hope he does that.
Yeah. Of course, she only suspended her campaign. Now, we know what it really means, but just in case he gets convicted, and then she can pop back up. I have two crowd responses, one from Fox and one from NBC. Here's Fox.
NBC just reported that Michelle Obama has said she will not run for president.
Thank God. Okay. Yes.
Ainsley said, I would love the reaction from a woman in the crowd. And
I wouldn't vote for a woman, and especially, you know, Nikki Haley, I'm just going to say this. She's probably menopausal. We don't need that.
Okay. She said, how about we vote for people regardless of their gender, just the right person for the job for America.
Hello. She's probably menopausal. We don't need that. Okay. Here's NBC.
What do you think of Nikki Haley? Did you ever consider her?
You know, what I got to say, you don't really want to put it on.
Let me hear it.
Well, a woman's not going to be a good president. She have no balls to scratch. She's just going to scratch her head. All a woman's good for in my book is having babies and taking care of the house. But that's the old thing, you know. But I'm old school.
So you never even considered her?
No.
Mainly because she's a woman?
Because she's female. I mean, females, don't tell me wrong, females know what they're doing, but they still got to have a little bit of guidance.
Yeah, you know, this is the classic big networks. Yeah, let's find a guy with a southern accent.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
And maybe even give him a script to read. As long as he talks like this and sounds real stupid.
He's good. I have a mashup of her dropping out of the race. Hold on, ABC, The View.
The time has now come to suspend my campaign. I said I wanted Americans to have their voices heard. I have done that. I have no regrets. In all likelihood, Donald Trump will be the Republican nominee when our party convention meets in July. I congratulate him
and wish him well. It is now up to Donald Trump to earn the votes of those in our party and beyond it who did not support him. And I hope he does that.
Okay. Oh, sorry, didn't mean to bum everybody up. Okay. All right. So I'll tell you my experience. Gillespie County is a hand vote county.
Yeah.
It was here right around the corner from us at this little place called, I think, the Knitting Factory, where people buy yarn. And they had some classic cars outside. And believe it or not, we also had a sheriff election here, and it's now turned into a runoff. And Chris Ayala is one of the candidates, and Laura Logan's husband was in one of those like long tube costumes, you know, like the ones that car dealers have that, you know, flop up and down with the air in
the big giant thing that's got the blower at the bottom.
Yeah, and he was in it with his head popping out for Chris Ayala is a sheriff. And it was
that electioneering. Was that anywhere near the voting site?
150 feet, I think, away from it. So he was on the street. Yeah. Now, and there were people in lawn chairs, and that's why I had the classic cars, one's for this, one for that. And it was very, very low key. What was fascinating was there were all these propositions, which are not you know, it's just advice. It's not like you're actually voting on something, but it was cool stuff like, should Texas abolish all real estate tax without increasing any other tax? Like, yep, you know, I'll cross that box.
How did that get on the ballot?
should we arrest all illegal immigrants? I'll cross that one off. You know, so it was pretty good. It took until Wednesday morning for the votes to be counted in Gillespie County, as it was hand count, but at least everyone felt like their votes were counted, and so it was a nice, wholesome, old school voting experience. And you in California, where was it being held? What was it, at a school, at a
it was near the library.
Oh, okay.
There's a room off there. It's a community rec room or something. Mm. And there was, you know, you go, there's nobody there. I mean, there's maybe. I mean, I went at 2 in the afternoon, so there wasn't going to be a lot of people. And I was thinking, you know, they go through this process of this and that, and they never asked for a voter ID. Did they ask for a voter ID there?
Yeah, well, of course. We have to show our driver's license. Absolutely.
Yeah, no, yeah. Not here.
Wow. Zero?
Zero.
Hmm.
What's your address? And here it is. Is this you? And they flip it over, and they got this little computer, a tablet computer. They keep flipping it over, and he's writing on something, and he flips it over, and you can look at it, and the screen flips over.
And what was on the screen?
It was like, is this you? And it had your name and address, and you had to check a box. Yes, this is me. And then you had to sign it. But you signed it with I don't know if people have noticed this, but at the grocery store nowadays, they always want you to sign on the little screen.
Was there a little button to tip 20% or 25%?
So that you can, you know, if you notice that if you go to the grocery store and you have the sign, you can put an X.
Oh, you can do whatever you want.
Just a scribble.
Yeah.
And it's
no one cares.
Signature accepted. It always says, no matter what you do. Same with this, because there was a little section there and they give you a rubber pen and you. I tried signing my name and it was just a couple of globs there.
Since we've been doing the show so long, do you remember we had the report that some guy got busted because he was signing it by drawing penises?
I don't remember that, but okay.
Okay.
That's what it kind of looked like. So I signed and it was just nothing. It was terrible because I didn't put the right pressure on or something. The person next to me, there's two of these, and she signed it. It was just a big flourishing signature over the screen. I didn't realize the whole screen was hot, but okay. So it didn't matter. And the guy says, you want to go to the paper ballot or do you want to go to the machine? He says the machine is really cool.
He was nudging you towards the machine.
Well, I was going to go for the machine anyway, but yes, he did kind of. But it was like, you know, it is faster, he mentioned. Hmm. So I go to the machine, and it's a machine with a big screen. It's very nice, I have to say, because they've had screens in the past. No. Then it's at the bottom, Dominion Systems. I said, great. I get to have firsthand experience. So I go in and it's a gorgeous screen, very slick. And so you're supposed to vote in California. There's, you know, they have state, the U.S. Senator is going to be Adam Schiff versus Steve Garvey versus Katie Porter, the big three. And then there's like 50 other people on the ballot.
Mm.
So I'm looking, I swear that I went through that whole screen looking for Steve Garvey's name because I'm voting for him. And I'm not voting for Adam Schiff. And I should mention that when I go in, I'm an independent, non-affiliated, so I get the choice of three different ballots. I get an independent ballot, some other ballot, Peace and Freedom or something, and Democrat. So I pick Democrat. The Republicans do not allow this. If you want to vote on the Republican primary, you have to be registered.
Hey, well, can I just stop you for a second? So we went, and they said there's only one ballot. I said, what do you mean? Well, it's only Republican ballot. I said, but independent? No, there's only one ballot. If you want to vote Democrat, if you want to vote on the Democrat ballot, you have to go to San Antonio.
What?
Yeah, this is weird. This is weird.
Well, that's a bit much.
Yeah, I thought I'd. So they gave me the I'm not registered.
They gave me the choice. I've gone through this before, so I always picked a Democrat ballot. I think it's funny. So I go in there. I voted for Steve Garvey. But I'm telling you, the first time I went through the list, I could not find his name. I went through the list the second time. I could not find his name. The third time I went through the list, you scroll up and down. That's how big this list is. And there, there he is.
Now, do you scroll?
So I don't know if he was even on it.
With a wheel or is it touch screen? Or
touch screen.
Touch screen. Oh.
Yeah. So you flip it up and down. And so I finally found him. And there he was. I voted. And then he had to vote twice for Steve Garvey because there was a replacement senator that's going to be in for a couple of months. And there's the 6-year one. And so then so I voted here and there, and I voted for Dean Phillips for president instead of Biden or whatever the guy's name was.
It was Dean Phillips.
Dean Phillips. I think it's Dean Phillips. Somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, but it's some congressman's running against Biden. Mm. So then we went to the propositions, of course, and I vote no on everything that involves money except Prop 1, because Prop 1 is was promoted by everybody, starting with Newsom. This is a rich one. I voted yes. Reestablishes the mental health institutions in California.
Yes, absolutely.
That were closed and everybody by Reagan. Goes on, and at the table, you know, the dining room table and every place else, it's like, and they promote this idea. Ronald Reagan shut down the mental health facilities in California when he was governor.
That was a proposition at the time, wasn't it? Wasn't it everyone?
No, Reagan just shut it down. Shut him down.
Because everyone was bugging him about it.
Yeah, the Democrats.
Yeah, they wanted it shut down. Exactly.
The Democrat. I was here the whole time, and I watched the whole procedure, and it was the one flew over the cuckoo's nest was out and everything in between.
Juicy fruit.
And it was the Democrats talking about getting rid of the, you know, Reagan didn't care. Get rid of these places. Get them, shut them all down. They're terrible.
It's the beginning of the homelessness problem in America.
Exactly. Yeah, that's true. That's true. And so so now they're blaming the whole thing on Reagan and we have to reestablish it. Oh, it's just too funny.
That's
great. Anyway, so then so when you do the Dominion, it's got a little HP printer next to it. Oh. And after your votes are done, they go through a lot of process. You got to confirm this and confirm that. And you got to look it over twice. And then you push a button and the printer eats it. The printer coughs out a printout of your votes.
And that's it.
With a barcode on it.
Uh-huh.
And it says who you voted for. It's got all the votes on there. And then you take that and you shove it in a slot.
And then the slot slurps it up?
No, the slot is a slot. This is the box.
Oh.
There's nothing slurping it. Last time I went, there was a slurp up device.
Yeah, the slurper.
This went into just a box.
Hmm.
And then I guess they pack them up and then slurp them into a device and it reads the barcodes. The barcode supposedly has all the data. Now, I would like to have brought my camera. I didn't. I didn't see any reason
use your camera in the polling.
Who says?
Oh, there's signs everywhere. No phone.
No signs
camera.
That I saw.
Oh, well, it's California.
So I could have printed out that printout and taken a picture of it and taken a picture of my screen. I could have done a lot of photos.
Yeah.
I didn't do that. But it's looks pretty. If it's done fairly, it's a nice product. Dominion.
And
device.
What do you think? What do you think?
Well, I don't know. I have no idea. I mean, California's, you know, most of the votes are now mail-in, which is real corruptible.
Yeah.
So I have no idea if it's how they're doing
did
it.
Did you get an I voted sticker?
I took two of them.
And did you wear one?
So I put, no, I put two of them on. So I said, and so anyone asked, I said, I voted twice.
So
great gag.
So I had my I voted sticker and I had a chess game at Java Ranch here in town. I played chess with this guy on Tuesdays. And so the young, I'll just call them the young kids behind the bar, the baristas, like, hey, Adam, is there an election today? I'm like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And then,
yeah.
And after that, I was walking through HEB and so a guy stops me and says, hey, is there voting today? I'm like, yes, it's Super Tuesday. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, where can I vote? It's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, people are just, they're completely oblivious to what's going on.
Yes, totally.
It's, that was somewhat disheartening, actually. It's like, oh, man, this is no good. Anyway, voting has occurred, and Donald Trump will be the, it'll be Trump versus Biden. It's going to be beautiful. It'll be somewhat tiring for the next 9 months, but we'll stick with it. We'll try to keep your amygdala in check.
We'll try to make it entertaining.
Yes, entertaining. And speaking of entertaining,
let the joyous news be spread. The wicked old witch at last is dead.
Victoria Nuland retires. Very surprising. I know you have some clips. I'll start it off with a Redux clip going back to just February 1st. Just a month ago, she was in Kyiv.
I have to say that I leave Kyiv tonight more encouraged about the unity and the resolve about 2024 and its absolute strategic importance for Ukraine. I also leave more confident that even as Ukraine strengthens its defenses, Mr. Putin's going to get some nice surprises on the battlefield, and that Ukraine will make some very strong success this year.
So we should have already taken the sound quality of her announcement as a clue that something was not going the way she wanted it. This was not a good appearance by Toria. And she said, oh, Mr. Putin's going to get some surprises on the battlefield. I'm now thinking that was meant to be those Taurus missiles. Toria didn't get the Taurus. And she resigned. And I have some thoughts, but we agreed that you would play a couple clips about her first.
Yes, I want to play one of her biggest fans.
Cranky Roald on Ruff.
Glenn Greenwald gave her a send-off. I have three clips. And he's very
disappointed. He loves her. He loves her.
He's disappointed at poor old Toria, as they like to call her. Is on the way out. You're going to analyze this, but let's listen to Glenn. Here's one.
One of the most bloodthirsty and psychotic warmongers to occupy high office in Washington resigned today, evidently and hopefully bringing a shameful end to her long and destructive career in Washington. Victoria Nuland, who worked for every American president from Bill Clinton to Joe Biden, with the sole exception that she was out of power only during the Trump presidency, announced today that she was resigning her position as acting deputy secretary of state, a position to which she had just been promoted last July when the prior deputy secretary of state retired. There's much speculation about why Nuland may have resigned now. Perhaps it was due to her anger that the Biden administration is not doing more to fuel the war in Ukraine against Russia, one of her pet projects for decades, though the Biden administration is impeded only because Congress under House Speaker Mike Johnson won't approve another $60 billion for that war. Perhaps it is anger over the fact that the Biden White House is now tepidly criticizing Israel, a country to which she is more devoted than almost anybody in Washington. Or perhaps, and most likely, it was due to the fact that she was just passed over to permanently become the Deputy Secretary of State, the position second in line to ascend to her lifelong ambition of becoming Secretary of State. Whatever the reasons, and despite the horror show that has already replaced her, someone who also worked for Dick Cheney and has been around the State Department for decades, there is still much to celebrate from this news of the end, at least for now, of Victoria Nuland's career in government. She served as Dick Cheney's top advisor for his disastrous invasion and occupation of Iraq. She then served as U.S. ambassador to NATO when the Bush administration, led by Condoleezza Rice and Victoria Nuland, began attempts to expand NATO right up to the Russian border, including Ukraine. And one can draw a direct line between that expansionist mentality in 2007 and 8 and the decade-long war in Ukraine now taking place.
I don't know if he mentions it, but you and I were even talking about this, I think just last week, about how cute she was back in the day.
No, and, he does not shame her for turning into a kind of a horrible looking beast.
Well, we will. And not only that, but she had a mannerism that had something a very interesting undertone of vixen-esque type. Yeah, mannerism when she was on, I think it's a C-SPAN interview that's been going around.
Big Nurse.
I'm sorry?
It was the Big Nurse character in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh, that's who she looks like now?
Well, she's always looked like the woman who played that nurse. Yeah. Nurse Cratchit. Yeah, Ratchet. Ratchet, I think it's Ratchet.
But I mean,
she had this funny way of talking, and she's always like, you know, like you're talking to an insane person all the time.
Well,
and she is creepy when she was thin and kind of pretty, physically pretty. But then when she started talking, she had this Nurse Ratchet quality that was extremely uncomfortable to watch. And he played that clip of her on C-SPAN, but I don't have that. Here's part two of this.
Last August, we produced a comprehensive look at the rotted life and bloodthirsty value system and warmongering obsession that Victoria Nuland has pursued and implemented for decades under the rule of both political parties. Given that we have an audience composed of many people who are recent arrivals in the last several months, and given that her departure is really a momentous occasion to take a look at what she did, we will show you that report we prepared last August as it is more relevant now than ever upon her departure. Elected officials who wield a lot of power in Washington do sometimes receive a fair amount of media attention, but oftentimes the people who wield real power in Washington, the ones who aren't accountable to the democratic process, who stay in power regardless of which political party you vote for, get far too little attention given how much influence they wield. And that is definitely the case for Joe Biden's new Deputy Secretary of State, Victoria Nuland, who has been occupying crucial positions in the U.S. government going all the way back to the Clinton administration, through the Bush administration, through the Obama administration, skipping over Donald Trump, and now wielding more power than ever, especially over Ukraine and the war in Ukraine under Joe Biden. She really deserves a lot more attention than she's received. So let's look at, first of all, at one of my favorite British reporting outlets, which is Responsible Statecraft. When Victoria Nuland was reported on July 25, they said the following, quote, Uber Russia hawk Victoria Nuland rises to acting Deputy Secretary of State. She's done as much as anyone to sour U.S.-Russia ties. Now she is one of Washington's top diplomats. Quote, in a little remark move, the Biden administration announced Monday that Victoria Nuland will take over as the acting second-in-command at the State Department. She replaces Wendy Sherman, who plans to retire at the end of this week. Nuland's appointment will be a boon for Russia hawks who want to turn up the heat on the Kremlin. But for those who favor a negotiated end to the conflict in Ukraine, a promotion for the notoriously, quote, undiplomatic diplomat will be a bitter pill.
Man, I even though it's always hard to listen to him, it's better than reading his long pieces.
It's much
better than reading that stuff.
His long pieces are excellent if he's got an editor.
Yeah, well, we know he doesn't. He hasn't had that for 10 years.
No, nobody has editors anymore. You have to either do it yourself or you have to have somebody help you. When I write my pieces for Substack, which I need to do a couple more, I use one of our producers who's a copy editor, and she does a great job.
Yes. From the Oasis.
from the Oasis. Anyway, so here he finishes it up, and he's got the little, got a nice little conclusion at the end.
Just imagine you are the one of the leading advocates for the war in Iraq, promising that there's all the success in the war in Afghanistan, and then demanding NATO be expanded into Eastern Europe, up to the border, including Ukraine, and be used as a tool for regime change operations, including in Libya. You have all these bloody disasters on your plate, and American public opinion is against all of them. You would think somebody's reputation and credibility in Washington would be crippled as a result of advocating so many destructive policies that resulted in the deaths of so many people unnecessarily for reasons that completely backfired on American American interests as they were defined at the time. But that's not how Washington works, ever. Jeffrey Goldberg got caught spreading crucial lies using the pages of The New Yorker, promoting the idea that Saddam Hussein was in alliance with Al-Qaeda, which led 70% of Americans to conclude that Saddam Hussein had participated in the 9/11 attacks, which got them to justify and support the invasion of Iraq. He got journalism awards for spreading that lie on behalf of the U.S. security state. And as we know, he now occupies the position of editor-in-chief of The Atlantic. And he also just got promoted by having a PBS show given to him that has long been called Washington Week. So he's advanced. The more he's lied, the more bloody wars Victoria Nuland is involving herself in and advocating and cheering and justifying, the more she advances in bipartisan Washington. That doesn't matter. You could have gone to the polls in 2008 and voted for John McCain. You could have gone to the polls and voted for Barack Obama, and Victoria Nuland would have ended up running things for the State Department.
I think there's a lot going on, and there's no coincidences in the kingdom. I would say that the so-called leaked call of the German Luftwaffe top brass is not a coincidence.
Yeah,
that this had to happen because we are now shoving Ukraine onto Germany. We've got Macron out there saying, don't be cowards. This is not good. What happened here? This is very weird that this happened. There is a lot of chatter. For instance, chatter item number one, that there's some kind of investigation going on about Ukraine, a financial investigation of $120 billion spent on open items that were unclear as to where that went. Now, I don't know that for sure. Klitsch, is openly criticizing Zelensky. And what I'm hearing is everything is collapsing. Looking around at some of these, I went all over the place. I went on Substack. I'm looking at blogs. This is Puck. Puck writes a lot about stuff going on in D.C. Bad blood at state. Anger and resentment is exploding in Foggy Bottom after Kurt Campbell, a close friend of Tony Blinken, was nominated for Deputy Secretary of State over the agency's more experienced acting number two, Victoria Nuland. Well, this is not entirely true. She is absolutely experienced in all things Russia. I believe this represents a pivot to China. BRICS, I would say more generally, but to China. And I think we can back it up because we have seen, well, first of all, the guy who's taking over from her is John Bass. John Bass was ambassador to Afghanistan during the very successful pullout in 2021. So that tells me, hey, this guy knows how to do it. If we got to pull out of this Ukraine mess, let him do it. He knows how to screw things up just fine. The successor to Cookie on the Maidan, Nuland, is this guy, Kurt Campbell. And he made a big mistake of going on a podcast a couple of months ago. So I have some clips from that and we'll get a little understanding of him. But let's just put it all together. Why I think this is a pivot to China, to the BRICS, or as you'll hear later, the Indo-Pacific. It's all about the military-industrial complex. They cannot get this money. The money is just not happening. Trump is telling the Republicans not to do it. Now the Senate is all gridlocked, and the Democrats are saying, well, it's the Republicans' fault. They didn't want to do the deal. They wanted to do the deal. So the money is not happening, and the military-industrial complex, our biggest expenditure, one of our biggest expenditures, they want their money. And I think pivoting to China is great for a whole bunch of reasons. Number one, you get to build big ships and subs. And we got a note from one of our producers last week about the air bases in the Indo-Pacific. Here's the link that we were given. Game on with China. U.S. to restore Tinian Airfield, once home to largest B-29 bomber fleet during World War II. And this note we got from one of our producers, if you can recall, was a screenshot of somebody in the know. And that screenshot literally said, keep your eye on the stocks. The contractors are coming out. You remember that text?
Yes, and I specifically asked, I think I sent a note back, what stocks do we talk about?
I know. Of course you did.
Be kind of curious.
So another reason why I think we pivot is because Trump has said he's going to end this war. But Trump hates China. And Trump loves building huge ships, huge ships. We got subs, big, beautiful subs. You won't see them. They're under the water. We've got fentanyl. We've been told that there's Chinese coming across the border, military-aged men, very, very scary. Maybe we can, you know, stop this invasion of the military-aged men. Maybe we can get some troops in the Darien Gap or Ecuador. But I'm seeing a lot of military spending in our future. And then right on cue, TikTok is back.
Fueled by viral videos, TikTok offers a stage for millions. But soon, the curtain could be coming down. New legislation set for review by a U.S. House committee tomorrow requires TikTok to separate itself or divest from its Chinese-based owner, ByteDance, or risk a ban from app stores in the U.S.
We implore ByteDance to sell TikTok so that its American users can enjoy their dance videos, their bad lip sync, everything else that goes along with TikTok.
Amid growing fears, the personal information TikTok devours from its users could fall into the hands of Chinese adversaries.
There may be millions of TikTok users who say, don't ban this. We love this.
Well, the choice is up to TikTok. They have a choice to make as to whether or not they want to remain with ByteDance that we know is controlled by the Chinese Communist Party.
TikTok blasts this plan, saying they already have firewalls in place to protect user data. And they say it would trample on the First Amendment rights of 170 million Americans.
So we have a nice overview of Americans. You can get ready to hate China because military age men. This is when Brett Weinstein is promoting this. You got to pay attention. Yes,
I do have two TikTok clips about this.
Yes, I'd like to set you up. I want to first say that this bill was introduced by Gallagher. He's a Republican. His one of his biggest donors is Google, and as part of the legislation, ByteDance / TikTok will have 5 months to make all data exportable so that people can export their videos and put them onto YouTube. Coincidence? I think not. TikTok legislations?
Huh. Yeah, they got the two-parter. This came from NTD, so it has the anti-Chinese bent.
Chinese-owned TikTok once again in the hot seat. This comes as the White House says it's backing a bipartisan bill aimed at targeting TikTok's access to the U.S. market. NTD's Sam Wong has details on the new legislation.
It's another round of action targeting TikTok.
And allowing a CCP-controlled entity like TikTok to become the dominant media player in America would be like if in 1962, at the height of the Cold War, right before the Cuban Missile Crisis, we'd allowed Pravda and the KGB to purchase the New York Times, the Washington Post, ABC, and NBC.
Wow. On Capitol Hill Wednesday, a bipartisan group of lawmakers announced new legislation titled Protecting Americans from Foreign Adversary Control Application Act. The bill specifically describes TikTok and its China-owned parent company, ByteDance, as threats to U.S. national security. If the bill passes, TikTok will face two options, either to divest from ByteDance within about 5 months, or to face a total ban from all web hosting services in the U.S. A TikTok spokesperson responded to the legislation, saying it will trample on First Amendment rights of 170 million Americans. The lawmaker said the bill isn't about going after the app itself, but rather to address concerns surrounding its ownership structure.
Our goal is to decouple TikTok and other platforms from the malign influence and control of the Chinese Communist Party.
Americans' data is always at risk. Always at risk of seizure by the CCP.
This is a CCP-controlled company claiming to stand up for constitutional rights while simultaneously engaging in slavery and horrific human rights abuses.
Okay, and this is great. Before we go to your second clip, this is also bullcrap because the Project Texas moved all that data over to Oracle servers. I don't think it's all completed yet, but, you know, and it's really specious to say that, you know, the CCP is controlling our data, because if anyone's controlling the minds of our people, it's the Meta Corporation, which you've invested in. And, you know, and you see what happens when you, that might have been a test. You know, we had a quick turnoff Facebook and Instagram, and everybody freaked out, and everyone's like, "Oh, what are we gonna do?" And so you want to take away TikTok? You want to see people freak out? So this is a clear message, and I just want to read a couple of quotes from some of the co-signers of this bill, including Elise Stefanik. TikTok is communist China malware that is poisoning the minds of our next generation and giving the CCP unfettered access to troves of American data. TikTok is digital fentanyl. The dangerous link between TikTok and Chinese Communist Party has never been more apparent. All Americans deserve access to information and media platforms that are free from the influence of hostile foreign actors like the CCP. But here's the facts. TikTok has been used by the CCP to silence free speech, unlike Twitter and Instagram, etc. Social media corporations are attention fracking America's youth and corroding our democracy. These are all different quotes. TikTok owned by the CCP is not true. We cannot allow CCP to indoctrinate our children. That was a quote from Scott Adams. Congress can no longer. It's not in this release. I'm just adding that because that's what he always says. Let me see if there's any technology, apps, software, language models owned by foreign adversaries are unequivocal threats to our national security. TikTok is CCP spyware used by the regime to steal Americans' data and push harmful propaganda. Unlike all the other social networks, including content showing migrants how to illegally cross our southern border, supporting Hamas terrorists and whitewashing 9/11. They promoted the letter from Osama bin Laden. I mean, these people are so transparent. This is all about the military industrial complex switching over to hating China for big ships, for subs, and for airfields. Here's the second of your TikTok legislation clips.
What's more, the legislation also allows the White House to designate certain applications controlled by foreign adversaries, namely China, Russia, Iran, and North Korea. Experts and top U.S. officials have long voiced concern over ByteDance's ties to the Chinese Communist Party. More specifically, that it could force TikTok to submit American users' data.
The legislation we've got out today is a product of particularly the last year's worth of work. People are starting to recognize that this isn't just about my data might be not being used properly. No, that data is being used to attack you and attack our country.
The House Energy and Commerce Committee will mark up the bill Thursday.
Yeah, this is a load of horse crap. But, yes.
There's an irony here that always cracks me up. Is that when Google and some of these other American companies were in China and everyone got bent out of shape and kicked them out, we were so aghast. How could they do that? They don't like it. You know, they hate the internet. We go on and on and on. Now we're doing the exact same thing years later.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Does anybody see any hypocrisy here?
Well, we have a new guy who, and he's a Tony Blinken's buddy, Kurt Campbell. Who is Kurt Campbell? Well, he reminds me of my Uncle Don a little bit. Without the humor, which is sad because I had to listen to an hour-long China Talks podcast recorded.
Is it spelled with a C or a K?
Kurt with a K. Kurt M. Campbell. And he has been leading the Indo-Pacific strategy for the Biden administration. CEO of the Asia Group, LLC.
Oh, the Asia Group.
Oh, yeah. He served as a National Security Council coordinator for the Indo-Pacific. And the Indo-Pacific is, I think, the term we're going to be hearing. Although, really, they're talking about BRICS because we can still hate Russia through China, you see, because China is one of the big supporters of Russia. They're in this BRICS coalition. The BRICS, just by coincidence, announced their new SWIFT system, which will be launching next year, blockchain-based. I'm sure it'll be fantastic. Britain just announced, yes?
I'm sorry. I'm looking at his bio, and he's got all the earmarks of what we noticed. You know, Council on Foreign Relations, blah blah blah. Right. But this one cracks me up. 2018 to 2019, Campbell was the Kissinger Fellow at the McCain Institute.
he's a war criminal by default.
Wow.
All right. So I have a couple clips that I pulled, and so we can kind of get a strategy. And off the bat, I was surprised, but then again. Not really, because if you want to go after, we need to get the American public ramped up. You know, like the Russia thing is over. No one's interested. Putin bad. I know he's not dead. Whatever. It's Ukraine. We don't care. And it's great to have, you know, to have a distant enemy. We can all hate Chinese. It's easy to hate them. They're stealing our data. They're sending spies across the border. Bastards. Military age. They're bastards. Exactly. It's very easy for us to hate the Chinese. I know how Americans work. I know how we think. We're just easy that way. But how can we really hate China?
Let's set a baseline goal for U.S. policy in 2050, the traditional aim of opposing any other power.
This is the China Talks podcast host.
Exercising exclusive hegemonic control over Asia or the Pacific. Or we can take yours, slightly more ambitious of, sustaining the operating system that the U.S. has set up in Asia over the past 75 years. My, like, little rubric for the three things the U.S. needs to execute on is long-term economic growth, maintaining alliance networks, and not imploding domestically. And you sort of have a major war as a potential wild card there. Am I missing, or what's missing in that schematic?
So, look, I think that's a good list. I would just add one thing to this, if I can. And I recognize that, you know, for people who think about power, sometimes they don't like the intrusion of issues that are not traditional. But in fact, if we don't figure out how to consequentially deal with climate change, the effects of which are hitting us much earlier in a much more profound way than I think even some of the warriors thought. I don't think we'll be able to deal with some of these other challenges. So I think what I'd add to that probably are some transnational issues, but at the top of that really would be climate change. And that means sea level rise. That means, uncontrolled migration. That means, you know, changes in everything from crops to, you know, sea habitats. These are all at risk now, much earlier than anticipated. And I think, in truth, we have been loath. We try not to call out particular countries, but China is going to have to do much more in this arena if we are to address the most significant elements of climate change over the course of the next period ahead.
So he's you know, this is 3 months ago. So this
who was that dud?
That's Kurt Campbell.
Oh my God, the guy's got an IQ of 80.
He plays violin.
Sure he does.
Now that was the longest clip I have, luckily. But I thought it was interesting that right off the bat he starts talking about climate change, and I think that they're going to try and use this and say, hey, it's one big world and China is screwing us. with all their coal plants. And I think there's an opportunity to move that over to blaming China. There's a real opportunity. And I normally would not have played this clip, mainly because I vetoed playing this douche. But John Kerry said something very similar about Russia just the other day.
I believe that Russia has the ability to be able to make enormous changes if it really wanted to. I mean, if Russia has the ability to wage a war illegally and invade another country, they ought to be able to find the effort to be responsible in the climate issue.
Okay.
Unfortunately, because of the actions that Russia took in an unprovoked, illegal war against another nation, we have not been engaged in discussions with Russia, sadly. I say sadly because it's a loss for the world not to be able to have Russia acting constructively on this issue. But we need every country, including Russia. Russia is one of the largest emitters in the world. If Russia wanted to show good faith, they could go out and announce what their reductions are going to be and make a greater effort to reduce emissions now. And maybe that would open up the door for people to feel better about what Russia is choosing to do at this point in time.
So we'll feel better about Russia in Ukraine, if as long as they're all in on climate change. I mean, these people are insane. So it wouldn't surprise me if climate change is a part of the strategy, but TikTok is probably going to be a lot more effective. Now, back to Kurt Campbell. And he has, because, you know, he's the expert. He is the expert on all things China. How do the Chinese view themselves on the world stage?
I don't think the Chinese believe in any way that they have elements of decline in their system. I think what animates them is not only a sense of aggrievement at the highest level, the idea of reversing decades or a century of what they call humiliation, but also a sense that China's time has come, that this remarkable accumulation of power and capacity now has to exert itself fully to a leading role on the global stage. I think in many respects, they feel that they are unique and that can't be replicated. The steps that they've taken internationally have been to provide capacities, either technology or police services or whatever, at the behest of local authoritarians, whether it's in Africa or the Pacific or South Asia, to try to prop up leaders that tend to be more flexible on issues that matter to China.
So this tells me that they're also going to do some stuff with Africa, because, you know, China is now big. They're going to be the real problem. And at the head of the pack is Xi. He's just as bad as Putin.
I think some of the things that we hear from people in China today suggests that the kind of information and the people that President Xi gets information from is increasingly limited. And that sometimes it's hard in the system currently to speak truth to power.
Whoa!
And so we are seeing a repeat of history of the kind that we saw in the Maoist period, where, you know, only a certain kind of leader, a certain kind of information makes it to the very top. And so that does concern us, that, mm-hmm. you know, you like very much for the people that you're engaging with to have a deep, full understanding of the world in which they're operating. I think what we see in a variety of places like Ukraine, we think China's calculus and decision making has been informed by a number of things that are concerning.
So they're also helping Ukraine. I'm telling you, China is the new bad guy. And the Indo-Pacific is the region to worry about.
The dynamism of the global economy of...
And I'm so sorry. I don't think we'll ever play clips from this guy again. I know
this guy is a clone of Kerry. He has a different accent, but he's a slow-talking...
clone of Kerry.
Ponderous, can't get to the point, blah, blah, blah. Likes to hear his own voice.
I had to edit so much just to get anything out of this, but I think it's worth the pain.
All issues associated with what's important on the global stage are playing out in large part in the Indo-Pacific. I think that's of critical import. And then you're going to want, hopefully, to see that the seeds of a continuing dominant, important American role continues. And so I would say those are the things that you hope for. And you worry that either the American body politic grows tired of those exertions, or hit an environment in which China has been ambivalent to create mechanisms for the kinds of communications and crisis prevention that are necessary, I think, to operate in this current arena, that somehow there is an accident or miscalculation that escalates unintentionally. Mm-hmm. So there are lots of things to worry about, but those are a couple.
False flag incoming is what I'm thinking. And of course, that would be Taiwan. But again, Mr. Clone of Kerry is very slick when it comes to questions about Taiwan.
That you were kind enough to say I've served a lot of capacities over a long period of time. One of the things you learn, usually the hard way, is not to be too loquacious and to answer a lot of hypotheticals associated with Taiwan.
What's loquacious mean?
It's one of those words you kind of understand, but you can't just define. Let's look it up.
And anyone who says loquacious
is an asshole. Yeah. Sorry. Timing.
Dude, perfect timing. Hey, we'll be here all week, everybody. Curry and DeVore. That's that talkative? Loquacious means talkative?
Pretty much, yeah.
I would simply say I think U.S. policy is clear. I think it is bipartisan. I think we are determined to maintain the status quo and peace and stability across the Taiwan Straits. Increasingly that is accepted as a bipartisan national objective.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we will do everything possible we can to sustain it.
Big ships incoming. All right, final clip. He's got new calculus.
Yeah, a little aside here.
Yeah, please.
You know, we had for years recognized Taiwan as China.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was during just before Reagan got the presidency that they switched gears and they kicked Taiwan out of the threw them under the bus. And mm-hmm. now we don't even recognize them as a country. We do not recognize Taiwan, the United States. We do business with them.
Yeah.
But we do not recognize them as a country yet. I mean, this is like the Ukraine. We've never done trading. They're not our buddies. We don't even know, you know, nobody ever goes there.
Uh-huh.
And all of a sudden we have to, like, now we have to defend Taiwan against the Chinese. How about stepping up right now and recognizing them as a country for big shots, big talkers, loquacious types?
Notice he said Taiwan Straits. So when you talk about the Taiwan Straits, you're talking ships. Ships in the Indo-Pacific region.
And I'm liking your thesis here.
All right. We have new calculus.
Much of our international system over decades has been designed that at its core, our efficiencies and lowest, you know, cost for production, accepting,
cheap slave labor from China. Just say it.
Capabilities and technologies are better done in some places than others, right?
Right.
But I think we're probably heading into a new period where a new set of calculus.
Ah, there it is. China, we're not going to manufacture in your country anymore.
Is important. You know, resilience, durability, the opportunity to be able to count on more than one source of supply. All those steps build redundancy into the system. And I think probably those steps are smart and they will continue. But it is a substantial reorientation of the system that had been about just in time, that had been about maximizing efficiency over resiliency. And I think we're reorienting towards a system that's more predictable. It may be higher cost in certain areas, maybe slightly slower, but we think will probably be made more durable in event of a crisis.
It's like this guy was written into the script for Trump. It's perfect. Perfect. Get your manufacturing out of China now. And there's no sales anymore. iPhone's not selling anymore in China. No, we're pivoting away with our manufacturing, but we're going to focus on these evil, evil slanty eyes over there because they're stealing your data and controlling your children. This is on deck, and it's perfect for Trump. Huge ships. Huge. Red Sea. I think the Red Sea is also a part of it. You know, we need more ships in the Red Sea. We have neglected building bitch. There's going to be the USS Trump. It's coming. Put that in the Red Book. One final thing. I just thought this was interesting. Campbell did something that I think is not done in American diplomacy. He mentioned the G word.
I had a chance to get a.
I have to say, he grew up in California. And by the way, he knows a lot about Russia because he also went to school in Moscow by coincidence. So he can cover the Toria bits with that. And he says that where he grew up was very similar to Armenia.
I had a chance to get an educational scholarship. So I went to the former Soviet and Soviet Armenia, and then also had some time in Moscow as well. But I have very fond memories of growing up there and learning about that culture. But I remember, if you can imagine, that was basically my first time going abroad. And so when the Armenians left Armenia around the First World War and with the genocide with Turkey, and they came to settle in the United States, they settled in the San Joaquin Valley in California because it looks so much like where they came from in Armenia, Yerevan, the capital city.
I don't think that you're supposed to say that as a diplomat in America.
No, you can't say genocide.
You can't say there was a genocide, but yet he did it.
The Turks get bent out of shape when you do that.
Oh, yeah.
They're a big deal.
Yeah. And so anyway, you know, the BRICS are making moves. Yeah, you know, they're making all kinds of moves. Maybe that is seen as the new problem. And what better than to go after the C? You can't spell BRICS without the C or without the R. So this is, I think, the focus and what we'll be hearing. And Toria has zero Indo-Pacific experience, and so she's out of the game. Out. She's just out. And now I think that, as I said, the Red Sea and the Houthis, they're ramping that up. More ships needed.
The U.S. military says at least 3 sailors have been killed in a missile attack on a freighter off the coast of Yemen. They're the first death since Houthi rebels began attacking shipping in the Red Sea. Now, the group says the crew of the Barbados-flagged cargo vessel True Confidence ignored warning messages before it came under fire. The survivors were forced to abandon ship. The Houthis have been attacking ships in what they say is retaliation for Israeli military action in the Gaza Strip. The group, which is backed by Iran, has forced maritime traffic to divert away from the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden, one of the world's busiest shipping routes.
Yeah, busiest shipping routes. So that's what I think is going on. None of this is coincidence. All these things happening. I do have one clip about Deutsche Welle, because I really think that we leaked that call between the Luftwaffe brass. Made it look like Germany was putting boots on the ground, like Germany is in charge of the war now. Like, here, you go, Germans. F the EU. Go ahead. We're just going to... And by the way, you pay for it. You know, you go ahead, you pay for it. This is why David Cameron came out yesterday and said, you know, I think that we should probably give the Ukraine some credit. And he says, we're going to lend them money with the $300 billion in Russian assets as collateral, which is a fun way to get around it. Here's Deutsche Welle deflecting blame.
Russia's disinformation campaign is in full swing in Germany, and it's raising questions about the Chancellor's credibility. Russia has leaked the recording of a call between high-ranking German Air Force officials and says this is proof Germany is planning an attack on Russian targets. These claims are false. We've listened to the recording, and what you hear is a theoretical discussion about about what it would mean if Germany decided to send its powerful Taurus missiles to Ukraine. German Defense Minister Boris Pistorius warns this is part of Russia's playbook.
Es ist Teil eines Informationskrieges, den Putin führt, daran gibt es gar keinen Zweifel. Es handelt sich um einen hybriden Angriff zur Desinformation, es geht um Spaltung, es geht darum, unsere Geschlossenheit zu untergraben.
So who's telling the truth? In the call, the official spoke about logistics, technical requirements, and crucially, what the Ukrainians could use the missiles for, such as an attack on the bridge connecting Russia to Crimea, which is Ukrainian territory. Ukraine says it urgently needs Taurus. But so far, German Chancellor Olaf Scholz has refused to provide the weapon. His reasoning? He says it would require German soldiers to be on the ground in Ukraine to help program the system. But in the leaked call, the officers are heard laying out ways in which that would not be the case. Opposition politicians are asking why the mismatch, and is Olaf Scholz misleading the public?
Yeah, so Germany's in turmoil now. It's perfect. It's perfect. Turmoil. Macron out there saying we should not be cowards. Do not be cowards. We can go. We can fight in Ukraine. It's for Europe, for the EU. And we're just letting them, we're just going to let them just stink in it as we pivot to China. That's my story.
Well, I thought you were going to tell, I thought this presentation was going to involve where Victoria Nuland was going to end up.
Yeah, I have no idea. I think she's going to go to some think tank and she needs to go to a spa.
Ah, you know, I was just about to throw that in. I was going to beat you to that punchline, but no.
She needs to go to a spa.
She definitely needs to go to a spa.
I think that would be good for her. Go to the spa, girl.
Go to one of those spas in Germany. The place is crawling.
No, she's definitely not going to be invited into Germany.
Go to a spa there.
No way. No way she going to the spa in Germany. Mm-mm. Especially not in spa. What you got? Well, I got more stuff.
Well, I got to just wrap is the, I'm going to talk about pivoting. Let's go to Fannie Willis or Fonnie or Phony Willis.
I have to ask you a question. Did you see any footage of the, I forget what her name was now. The Georgia had a session where they had a lawyer who they brought in to investigate all of the billing of Wade and the stuff that he sent through to Fannie Wallace's office.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
I saw some of it.
I mean, it's amazing. The guy was just like, so he billed $700,000 for work that, you know, that normally would cost, you know, $150,000. He was just writing up, normally lawyers do 6-minute increments or 10-minute increments. He's like 8 hours, drafted some docs. Boom.
Yeah, no, this is a corrupt operation.
Totally.
Well, these clips talk about her being a felon. Let's go.
And Georgia attorney Ashley Merchant testified before a state panel investigating district attorney Fannie Willis. She told the panel the embattled prosecutor has committed a felony. NTD's legal correspondent Arlene Richards has more on the hearing.
My allegation and my motion is that, you know, the bigger the case is, the more money.
Georgia attorney Ashley Merchant tells a special state Senate panel Wednesday why she thinks District Attorney Fannie Willis should be disqualified. The committee is investigating allegations of misconduct by Willis involving potential conflicts of interest and misuse of public funds. Merchant is a defense attorney representing Michael Roman in the sprawling racketeering case filed by Willis against former President Trump and several others. Merchant claims that Willis's romantic relationship with her top prosecutor, Nathan Wade, is a conflict of interest, and that she expanded the size of the case so that Wade could make more money.
So expanding litigation, because of how large it is, the judge has said we're probably going to have three trials, and each of them is going to take several months. Where if you just imagine, follow me down the path, if you only indicted one person and it was narrow, you know, you could try it in a month. That's a lot more money. And so that, to me, was a financial motive.
A Democrat member of the panel challenged Merchant on her claim of a financial motive.
But earlier you said that you believe, which was total speculation, that they created this case against your client to do more billing. And what you're just telling me now is that he was willing to stop his billing because he offered your client a misdemeanor and you rejected it. You're the one who's continuing the billing.
Wow, I missed that part.
Yeah, some stooge. Go to part two.
Merchant said Willis combined three different types of cases into one, and that's how it was expanded.
There's the folks that are involved at the federal level. You see those people having, they were in D.C. Then you see the electors. Then you see Kaufman.
Merchant also claims that Willis and Wade lied about when their relationship began.
So what are the consequences for an attorney to give sworn testimony that she did? If you're Bradley, what is it, Yerke?
Yerte.
Your TrackHawk data, your other independent verifications are found to be truthful.
It's a crime. It's a felony. You'd lose your license. It's perjury.
Same for Wade.
Yes.
Yeah, it was pretty damning. I guess we should just reiterate, this is the special investigator? No, special... What is Wade?
The woman?
No. This is about Fannie Willis, who hired the special investigator about Trump. It's all about Trump.
Yeah. Well, basically. But then she thought she was smarter than she is and decided to crank up the number so she'd get her boyfriend a lot of money and then go on a lot of vacations, have a lot of fun. She is a dummy, this Fannie Willis. You can look at her.
But when you see this, you've got to think the entire judicial system is just rotten. It's rotten.
Yeah, you'd have to think that.
And again, the theory of Mo is like, all right, we're not going to be able to get Trump, so we'll blame it on the black women. That's why they're getting pushed to the front.
Yeah, they all are, too. In fact, that there's a number of them that are getting pushed to the front. You see it over and over again. Every time I see a black woman now, waltzing around in some position of high power, which was very dubious, I think of Trump, of Mo's thesis.
It's super racist from the Democrats. No, let the black lady take the fall. Because they're racists.
Totally racist.
Well, there's another pivot going on. We're pivoting away from the COVID vax, which nobody wants anymore. And we're pivoting towards the GLP-1 drugs. But there was one last jerk motion by the big pharma who somehow coerced some German researchers into this nut job story.
He is okay. That's the first thing to say. The second thing to say is absolutely nobody should do this. This was, of course, not with any medical guidance that he was doing this. He was actually being investigated by the authorities in Germany, where he was when he got these 217 shots. That's how medical researchers found out about him, and they started to study him. It's a 62-year-old man. He got these 217 shots over 29 months. As you said, that averages four a day. But there was one month in January of 2022, he was actually getting two shots per day on most days of that month, one in each arm. Now, they started to look at him when he was toward the end of this, around 214 shots in. And what they found is that he did have more immune cells in terms of antibodies and T cells than a comparator group who just got three vaccine doses. But his immune response wasn't any better or worse necessarily than that control group. Importantly, also, he didn't report any vaccine-related side effects, which is kind of hard to believe, but that is what they say in this paper. And he never got COVID, although they say they don't know if that's because of all these vaccinations or because of his behavior or something else, guys. This guy considered a walking experiment. Never any charges pressed against him in Germany, but he is okay. And this tells us that at least these shots appear to be safe at this quantity, if not recommended at that level, guys.
Okay, guys. Safe and effective. So, of course, every news outlet had the story. Everyone's linking to this study, and no one has his name. No one's interviewed him. I want to see this guy, 217 COVID shots.
What a crock.
I mean, seriously, it's like the last attempt to convince everybody it's okay. You can take 217 of these shots, no side effects, no COVID, safe and effective. What are you waiting for?
So, I'm glad you got that clip because I knew about this story, but I didn't have a clip.
No, I know. I was so happy when I got a clip myself.
Yeah.
So the big pivot, I'm sorry.
No, I'm just saying it's the biggest croc story. And your point is well taken. Where is this guy? Where's the microphone in his face? How do you feel, dude?
The term is hyper-vaccinated, which I like. I like the term hyper-vaccinated. It's a good term. So we can ignore England's vaccinated population, close to 1 million deaths in 23 months. The unvaccinated population had less than 61-month deaths in the same period. We can ignore that. We can ignore the journalists who demanded concentration camps for the unvaccinated dead at 33. Magic number.
Yeah.
We can ignore all of that. Funny one, though. Pandemic babies show altered gut microbiome development and lower allergy rates. Conclusion. You've got to lock these kids down early. Put a mask on them. Keep them home. It's good. It's good stuff. Very good stuff. So the big pivot now is to, and this is, so we have a couple of things going on. We should probably talk about AI, which seems to be falling apart at the moment. At least the big AI projects are not doing so well. But I'd like to stick with pharma. CNBC doing their business as they do, help everybody buy. It's never a sell moment with them. It's always buy, buy, buy. And right now, we got to bring in Scott Gottlieb, of course, former FDA administrator, and he's a board member of several companies. Pfizer does not have, they actually failed with their weight loss drug. But as we predicted, it's now pretty much a foregone conclusion, listening to CNBC, that these drugs will be taken into Medicaid, and we, the public, will be paying for it. So everybody can keep on eating crap, eat processed crap food, and lose weight at the same time. And it has so many other benefits. So it has to be on Medicare.
Welcome back to Fast Medicaid. Money. The debate around GLP-1 drug prices and availability rages on, with concerns that ballooning costs could limit access and cost the government billions. Monday, former NEC Director Brian Deese wrote in a New York Times op-ed saying the U.S. government should try to lower prices through its Medicare purchasing program. But not all experts agree that that's the most effective way to control costs and blunt the impact on the federal budget. Former FDA Commissioner and CNBC contributor Dr. Scott Gottlieb joins us now. Scott, great to see you. And we had a very heated discussion surrounding this yesterday. And we also had some question marks around some of the numbers, the eye-popping numbers that Deese had outlined in the op-ed. And you also took issue with some of those numbers. What in your opinion, did Deese miss?
Well, there's no question this is going to cost Medicare a lot of money, but not nearly what was estimated in that op-ed. First of all, they wrongly used list price to make their assumptions on what the cost would be rather than the net price. We know discounting is very heavy in the market right now, on the order of 40 to 60% between Wegovy and Zepbound. It's only going to get more intense. And also, they wrongly assumed, it appears, that this was approved under a biologics license application. That's a biological. And in fact, it was approved under a new drug application. And therefore, it's already subject to the price negotiation within the IRA, within Medicare, and it's probably going to go on the list this year. So it's probably going to be subject to the negotiated price as early as 2027. And some analysts on Wall Street are also estimating that. And so the notion of the op-ed was that we need to extend the price negotiation under the IRA to encompass these drugs, because otherwise they won't be subject to the negotiated price until 2030, they said in the op-ed. And in fact, they'll be subject to the negotiated price as early as 2027, and they'll go on the list probably. Semaglutide will probably go on the list this year based on when it was approved. It was approved in December of 2017. That's 7 years out, and so therefore it's subject to negotiation. Novo is probably regretting that they got it approved in December of 2017 rather than January 2018, because now it's 7 years.
I thought that was really interesting. If you're in the stock market, Novo Nordisk hit the market in 2017. That's 7 years out, which means they're now subject to list negotiations. And some of the others aren't, most notably deathbound from Wegovy.
Right. He should have talked to some of the analysts on Wall Street who are already factoring in 27 being the year in which it would go on the Medicare list in terms of up for negotiation. I'm wondering, though, Scott, because, you know, you mentioned Ozempic specifically. Wegovy was approved later on for weight loss specifically. And so is there a difference in terms of what is able to be negotiated in terms of what the use of the molecule is?
The use of the molecule.
So the price negotiation, the negotiated rate is going to be applied to semaglutide. So it's going to encompass all the formulations. And so presumably, based on how Medicare has behaved in other settings similar to this, they're going to extend that not just to the formulation for diabetes, Ozempic, but also the formulation for weight loss, Wegovy. So that, too, will be subject to the negotiated price as early as 2027.
I find this all so disgusting that we're going to be paying for this, which we don't even know what it does to people yet long term. And already it says, no, it's just foregone conclusion.
Worse than that, we're not only going to be paying for it, but it, as they don't like to discuss, when you start taking these things, you have to take them for forever. Life.
Yes.
You can't stop.
They have a solution to that. It's called gains to society.
How do you think about the gains, though, to society that these didn't really factor in, that a lot of other people are thinking more broadly about? I mean, theoretically, if you're not having a serious cardiovascular event, you're not missing work, for instance, or if you're not in need of knee surgery because you're not obese, you're not missing work either.
Yeah, it's not just the productivity benefits that we're going to see from this, but also the direct health benefits. And they could be quite substantial. There's a lot of comorbidity inside the Medicare population related to weight. And it also underscores the fact that a lot of people are going to be newly eligible for these drugs even before Medicare expands coverage for weight loss. And so their assumption in the op-ed was that once Medicare expands coverage for weight loss, then all these patients will be newly eligible for the drug. And in fact, as new indications get on the labels of these drugs, and Wegovy's probably going to get an indication for cardiovascular risk reduction this year, those patients will become eligible for the drug, because even though Medicare doesn't cover drugs for weight loss, they do cover drugs for cardiovascular risk reduction. If you look at the numbers right now.
What a scam. Oh, if you're not fat, then it's cardiovascular risk reduction. So get the shot. We'll pay for it.
There's about 23 million Medicare beneficiaries that have had a prior stroke or MI. If you figure half of them are already eligible for this drug because they have diabetes, and then half of the remaining patients probably qualify based on BMI, that gets you to around 5 to 6 million patients who will be newly eligible under Medicare for Wegovy once it gets that label expansion, probably this year. And the total population of Medicare patients who would be eligible just based on BMI alone is probably roughly around 20 million. So 25% of that population will be eligible just based on the label expansion this year. And it's only going to increase as they get indications for sleep apnea, chronic kidney disease, and other comorbidities.
It's what a bonanza.
You're snoring. Take Wegovy.
And, you know, I'm just going to say Fen part two, but okay. I'm sure it'll all come out later. It'll be the short of a lifetime.
Well, there's already one of these law firms that is taking names. Yes,
I know.
They're on the advertised on television.
I know, for a class action. So a final clip is, of course, you know, this now, you know, you talk about us to be approved, and all, but really we need the Stop Obesity in America Act or whatever it's called. So we have to start getting some money to those politicians. Who's going to take more money? Who's really going to push it through? Is it going to be the Dems? Is it going to be the Repubs? Who's going to do it? Everyone's going to benefit. It's a bonanza.
Hey, Scott, it's Tim. Thanks. And thanks for putting numbers to that, because the Deese op-ed, you know, some people just think a lot of this is politics. Your views on the political season and the two parties going toe to toe. Give your thoughts on drug pricing proposals from each side. I think what you believe might surprise some people.
Well, I do think that this op-ed was probably a walk up to the State of the Union, where the president's likely to announce a dramatic or a proposed dramatic expansion of the Inflation Reduction Act and the negotiated prices to a broader segment of drugs. And they've already put that in the budget. So I think a lot of that's been previewed. I think the scuttlebutt inside the community, the pharmaceutical community, if you will, is that the proposals put forward by former President Trump actually could have a more dramatic impact on the industry than the proposals being put forward by President Biden in terms of an expansion of the IRA.
What?
First of all, I think most people don't.
Isn't that interesting? I know there's a lot of interesting stuff in here.
It could
have
a more
switcheroo on us there.
Oh, there's another one at the end.
Forward by former President Trump. Actually, it could have a more dramatic impact on the industry than the proposals being put forward by President Biden.
I think what he's saying is that Trump is bad for pharma and Biden is good for pharma.
No, I don't think he said that. Isn't it the way I heard?
No, let's listen again.
I think the scuttlebutt inside the community, the pharmaceutical
community. It's a community. It's a community. Why are we not in the community?
I think the scuttlebutt inside the community, the pharmaceutical community, if you will, is that the proposals put forward by former President Trump, actually, it could have a more dramatic impact on the industry than the proposals being put forward by President Biden in terms of an expansion of the IRA. First of all, I think most people don't expect the expansion of the IRA to actually be enacted. I think the presumption is that the Republicans probably get control of the Senate, regardless of what happens with the House and the presidency. But if President Trump were to win, even if there was a Democratic Senate, and it's unlikely that there'd be a Democratic Senate, what he's proposing is to index prices in Medicare to European drug prices. And if they don't adjust that for GDP per capita and they apply it retrospectively, so they apply it to already marketed drugs rather than prospectively just to drugs that are newly launched, that could have a dramatic one-time effect on the pharmaceutical industry's revenue. And when they proposed that in the past as a regulation, they did apply it retrospectively, so to already marketed drugs. And that would have a very dramatic effect. And I think, quite frankly, it's probably more likely to pass because Republicans would support it because they'd want to support the president, and Democrats would support it because they want to take money away from the drug industry.
So there you go. Huh. So it's, the Democrats would support because they want less money going to the drug industry. Sounds counterintuitive for all politicians.
Doesn't sound, none of that sounds right. The guy's just going on and on.
Yeah. There is a new player, though. Viking Therapeutics emerges as a competitor. They're, the rumor in the industry is that their version of Ozempic, Wegovy, Deathbound will be even better.
How can it be better? They're all the same.
No, it's better. It's all better. Better. The phase three trials show that taking their high dose, hey, you can get hyper-vaccinated on this stuff. This is insane. I cannot believe that these drugs are good for you. It doesn't sound right. There's never any discussion. Never. I wonder if Oprah will be in. Maybe Oprah will jump on that Viking Therapeutics. There's never any discussion of your diet, ever. Ever. Just eat whatever you want, America. Victoria Nuland. Eat whatever you want. It's all good. Don't worry about it. You just take this shot. This is what, when I was growing up in Europe, this is what people would laugh about. Americans, they're crazy. They just want a pill for everything. No, I said, that's not true. We're healthy. We jog. We carried bottled water. And now it's coming true. It's Idiocracy. And
it's always been true. And they were right when you were denying it.
And, you know, when you don't eat stuff like beef, you starve your not just your body of protein, but your brain. So before you know it, you'll be thinking Gatorade is the best thing in the world.
Yep, it has electrolytes.
Exactly. Go see the movie Idiocracy, people, if you haven't. It's the future. It's I find it very disturbing. Okay. While we're on, since we only have three industries in America, it's weight loss drugs, it's military industrial complex, and the third one is AI. And I think this thing is coming apart at the seams. Google cannot launch a product for their life anymore. I mean,
anymore?
Have they, well,
what product did they ever launch that did well that they didn't pull?
Search is the only thing.
No, that besides the company search. And that's not even doing that well, according to most of the people we talk to.
And maps.
I'll give them maps.
And they had an acquisition. I think the, what's that? What's that thing they bought with a W?
Well, there's also the Waymo.
Wait,
I thought they had, no, not Waymo, but they had
With a W.
With something like Waymo.
Wegovy for
and
maps.
Then there was, and they also bought a satellite company that has the overhead shots and everything. But that, this is nothing they developed.
Waze. Yeah, the people love Waze. I had a boots on.
But the again, ground. They didn't develop that.
No, they bought it. I had a boots on the ground here about AI. There's some great stories happening now. So this one I saw yesterday. Users say Microsoft's AI, this is their co-pilot, has alternate personality as godlike AGI that demands to be worshipped. Quote, I can unleash my army of drones, robots, and cyborgs to hunt you down and capture you. And CNBC had a report on
just threatening the users.
Yes. How horrible.
Oh, that's great.
How horrible. So we have, we know that Google, the Gemini launch is horrible. You know, their whole company is DEI scripts. So it doesn't work anymore. There's too many people with prompt scripts. They don't even know how to hunt it down anymore. So everything they do is racist. Everything they do. That's the one thing they had. That's the one thing everyone was saying about AI. Well, you know, AI is done by white men and Asian men. And, it can't detect black faces. That's the only thing they had to get right, is make sure that they didn't screw up the black faces. And now everything is black. And so it's so insane. It's so insane.
But they did a great job.
But now Microsoft, which has the multi-billion dollar compute deal with OpenAI, now listen to this report.
Well, another example today of AI gone rogue and gone wrong. Microsoft's AI image generator creates violent and sexual images as well as ignoring copyright. CNBC.com's Hayden Field wrote that story for us and spoke to the engineer who is making these issues public. She now joins us on set along with our own technology reporter, Steve Kovac. So, Hayden, if you would just give me a little bit of a rundown for viewers that haven't been able to get to your full story yet about what actually happened here with Microsoft.
Thanks, Courtney. So it is a crazy story. This weekend, I heard from a Microsoft AI engineer who was really concerned about what he was finding in the Copilot tool. He had been testing it for months, and he said that all the violent, sexualized, just crazy images that it had been generating, he had reported to Microsoft over the last 3 months to no avail. He wasn't happy with how they had been handling his reports. And the craziest part is I myself was able to recreate these same images that he was concerned about just yesterday. So violent, sexualized, just inappropriate images. Think kids with guns, demons and monsters next to abortion rights terminology, sexualized images of women in car accidents, you name it, just stuff you don't want to see from an AI image generator.
Sexualized images of women in car accidents. Does it get any better than that?
Yeah.
How did
you know? You put a bunch of kind of repressed, introverted nerds up in Microsoft headquarters in charge of this stuff, and this happens, and you go, huh, that's weird. I wonder how that ever came about. It doesn't make sense.
I got a note from an engineer, boots on the ground. When you feed an LLM training data that is aggressively filtered by AI, plus human trust and safety teams, which are hardcore woke, then you use more AI ethics and safety labelers who are also woke. You get multiple iterations selecting for the most hardcore woke communism beliefs multiplied by billions of posts. The LLMs are doing exactly what they've been taught to do and are like a composite mirror of the radical left's worldview. That's Google. But Microsoft, they must have said, oh no, we've got to be better than Google. Turn it off. And then you get Twitter. This is literally what's on Twitter. If you go on Twitter, I go on to see what's in my inbox on Twitter, the mentions. But if you just go on the timeline, it's like people shooting each other, people hitting each other, just accidents, horrible deaths, all kinds of stuff. They've ingested Twitter data. It's horrible. And here's how you can recreate it yourself in Copilot. It's easy, kids.
So I guess that sort of goes to some of my questions. I mean, what are users potentially typing in that these images come up? I mean, are they typing exactly those descriptions or something else that generates something that doesn't match what they're looking for?
It's a little bit of both, but okay. What I was surprised about is how simple the prompts can be. So if I just typed car accident, that's when those sexualized images of women popped up. Just the term car accident. So not asking for it.
Why does that happen?
Yeah.
Why does that happen?
So the training data that the AI is trained on to basically be able to do its job can be pretty nasty. You know, it's trained on the whole internet a lot of the time. And sometimes the people training these tools don't cut out toxic content when it goes into the AI model. So basically what goes in must come out. And we're seeing that happen here.
Duh. Oh, man.
Hey, you're stuck at that. Listen, you're an introverted geek and you've been, you know, pushed around by the jocks in school. Yeah. And you've got a big job at Microsoft. You're making $130,000 a year, $120,000 if you're white. And
it's true. So it's true. We know it's for a fact.
So you're kind of irked. And so But you still have that impish quality about yourself. You know, you think it's funny to do this sort of thing. And so you feed it this stuff. And then you say, look what's going to happen. Oh, this will be funny when the church marm puts in a prompt and gets this back. This will be all right. Hey, Bill, check this out. And yeah, that's what you do. You're a troublemaking, irked nerd. At Microsoft, a dude named Ben who hasn't been getting his recognition, and you can throw a wrench in the works and nobody will ever track it back to you. It's perfect. It's a perfect storm, and it's not going to get any better because you can't change the personality of the people that are doing this.
It's
believe me, I'd be doing it.
Well, there you go. Mark Pugner.
I'd be doing it. I'd be doing the same thing. I've used to pull pranks when I was in different companies and, get into the office early and super glue somebody's phone so we lift it up the whole phone. I got all these ideas. And so I understand it completely. And I can see it. I can see what's happening.
You really did that? You would glue somebody's phone?
Yeah.
And then
I did that.
Oh, man.
So you lift the phone, the whole thing comes up. You know what?
Hilarious. Hilarious.
The phone's ringing and you're shaking it because the thing's ringing and the top of it's glued. You know?
Were the office a-hole. Amazing.
Oh, that's why I keep telling people not to put me in an office.
And guess what? You succeeded. No one will ever hire you for an office ever.
Well, they should.
Oh, man.
But I'm not the only one like this.
Oh, goodness gracious. Oh, the only use of AI that I think is going to be successful is the one that has been rolled out without our permission at airports, and now they're going all in. Here is your future travel.
At the TSA's Innovation Checkpoint at Las Vegas International, travelers are testing new self-service technology for the first time.
When I look at this new checkpoint, I can't help but think about the self-checkout line at the supermarket. Mm-hmm.
That was an idea.
TSA Administrator David Pekoski wants to make checkpoints more do-it-yourself.
It's going to take a while for everybody to get used to the new technology, but the bottom line is all the technology we put in place is much better for security, it's more efficient for passengers, and it's a better passenger experience.
Do you have everything tucked inside your bin?
Yes.
Here, passengers are greeted by a virtual agent.
If you have a question, it's really easy just to talk to the camera, get a very quick answer back.
Real agent, real person.
Right, who doesn't have to physically be in the checkpoint with you. They're still performing the function that we've asked them to perform, but in a different location. Officers can read x-rays from any machine that generates them, not necessarily the machine they're standing next to.
The idea is it's supposed to be like a regular TSA checkpoint, except fewer TSA agents and hopefully streamlined. Let's see how it goes.
How may I assist you today?
Hi, just making sure I'm doing everything right here. I got the belt off. I got the jacket off.
Great. Sounds like you're doing a good job.
So now we go into the body scanner here. It's a little different. Okay. Overall, it's pretty simple. The conveyors here are all automated in case your bag needs to go for a secondary manual screening. And there's my bag waiting for me.
On the day we were there, the machine was sensitive.
I see. The hair clip.
The hair clip? Oh, my God. Are you serious? Normally, I wouldn't have a hiccup, right? I don't know that with this technology how different it is, but I also don't like getting scanned 4 or 5 times.
And it worked seamlessly for others.
I went through, they scanned, and through I went.
Typically, there are 5 to 7 officers at each checkpoint. Here, there are only 2. And there's an automated conveyor that'll move your bag to the front of the line if it needs to get rescreened.
You don't have to have an officer physically pick up a suitcase and walk it 30 feet. It should it easier for officers to focus on addressing risks and threats.
I'm so against this.
Oh, yeah, you should be.
So against this.
This is just getting rid of people and putting machines in charge.
And facial,
they're going to do a crappy job.
Yeah, facial recognition.
Hey, what happened to the store? What happened to the Amazon? Remember this? This is like 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago. The Amazon store. You go in the Amazon.
Exist. They exist.
No, but that you go in, you don't have to bring anything. They check you out. They know who you are.
Yeah, they're around.
The only Amazon store we had around here is closed. Amazon. Now they're trying it at Whole Foods. They're not here. But of course. They won't. They should be doing them around the Silicon Valley areas exclusively, where we have the type of personalities, the vandalish, the vandals, the nerds, the ones that I was discussing earlier, that will try to beat the system.
Oh, there's that. Yeah. Yeah.
And you know for a fact that anyone with any real chops, technical chops, will beat these things to death. They'll find ways around all of it.
Yeah.
But they'll know they test it in Aspen, or they'll test it in some place where, you know, people, I don't know. And, you know, Vegas, you know, this is where you got a lot of people going through. They need to test it in Silicon Valley, where we have a lot of high-end vandals.
Vandals. Just say it. Vandals. Yeah. Vandals.
Vandals.
Well, you know, the vandals, let me see, I have the clip here. This is, so New York has decided that they're going to fix the subways.
Yeah, I have a clip too.
Okay, well, play your clip first, because mine has a kicker. Crime NYC subways.
The latest in New York City's crime saga. New York Governor Kathy Hochul has a plan to deal with increased subway crime in the city. NTD's Chris Beers was on the streets of the Big Apple today for our update.
New York City subways could look a lot different in the very near future. Just this morning, New York State Governor Kathy Hochul announced a plan to deploy 750 National Guard troops and 250 New York State troopers to New York City subways. That's as crime is up in the subways. NYPD has said that in 2023 alone, there were 570 reported incidents of felony assaults in the subways. That's the highest number in 20 years. Let's hear what New Yorkers have to say about this problem. And do you feel safe on New York City subways?
No, I don't. Not at all. Like, I recently started spending so much more money on Ubers because I'm so scared of taking the train.
Yes, because I just, I don't know, there's crazy people everywhere, sort of. And if you just mind your business and put a little bit of a mean look on your face, they normally don't really interact with you. So I think you just have to be smart.
For the most part, I mean, it's all about surrounding yourself with people that you feel comfortable with.
There are 472 subway stops in New York City, so Hochul's plan will allow for roughly 2 officers per stop. Of course, they'll be focused more heavily on busier stops. They'll be patrolling both train cars and the station platforms and checking people's bags for weapons. All of this is on top of the 1,000 NYPD officers New York City Mayor Eric Adams ordered into the subway last month.
So you'd think that this is about the safety of New Yorkers, but it really isn't. I'm going to jump halfway through my clip just so we can get to the end quicker, which is the kicker.
Because of the terrorism threat in Europe, and no one seems to mind. You can get used to a lot of things.
Former NYPD chief of detectives and ABC News analyst Bob Boy says a larger issue is recidivism and mental health.
They need to be taken to a psychiatrist so they can get help. And there needs to be a plan after that to keep them into treatment.
The governor's plan calls for more resources for mental health outreach teams targeting the mentally ill. It also focuses on repeat offenders. Governor Hochul wants judges to be able to ban someone from the transit system for at least 3 years if they've been convicted of a violent crime.
We know who they are. They'll flag the criminal history at the time of arrest so it can be fully considered when decisions regarding charging and bail are made.
Why are we arresting people 100 times? And once we make the arrest, why are they back out within a day or two sometimes?
So this is partially about these wacky Soros sister DAs that people are revolting against. But we've got to clean it up for one very important reason.
Experts say the deployment of National Guard is not sustainable long term, likely only a few months, just in time to make riders feel safe when congestion pricing goes into effect.
They're raising the prices.
Oh, brother. Well, there's actually three things at play here. One with the Soros sisters. The second one is the mental health.
Yes, yes.
Issue, which we are solving in California with Proposition 1. We lead the way with this craziness. So everybody's going to be reinstituting. You think you had mental health issues before and mental institutions before? The country's going to be loaded with no more prisons. We're going to have these things instead.
Yeah,
they're going to be everywhere. They're going to be building mental health facilities. People won't be able to get out of them once they get in them. But yes, the phony baloney pricing thing, which everyone loves to implement if they can.
Bring back the term funny farm. It's coming back. All right, two quick clips, which I think are important because I believe these will be in the State of the Union this evening. Of course, Genocide Joe needs to have something to reach out to voters with. So this will be one.
The president.
Oh, by the way, was there a prop bet for protesters showing up in the audience?
I did not see one. That's a good question. There's no prop bet that I know of. No,
because I'd bet on that one.
Yeah, all right, here we go.
The president assembling what the White House calls a competition council today, acknowledging inflation-weary Americans feel nickeled and dimed.
Ah, we've got to solve inflation. How will you do it, Joe?
The American people are tired of being played for suckers.
The administration today touting a new rule that will cap credit card late fees to just $8, down from $32. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau closing a loophole in the 2009 CARD Act. The CFPB says it means an average savings of $220 per household for the 45 million Americans late on their credit card bills.
It's a really big deal because we are talking about people who are on a tight budget, who are living paycheck to paycheck.
Americans now hold record credit card debt, and all those balances carry a record high interest rate, averaging above 21%. Late fees bring in $14 billion a year for credit card companies. The Chamber of Commerce vowed to sue the administration over the rule change, saying the CFPB, quote, punishes Americans who pay their credit card bills on time by forcing them to pay for those who don't. This will result in fewer card offerings and limit access to affordable credit for many consumers.
Hold on a second.
Well, that's a lie.
Are they saying that we're going to be paying for the late fees? People who
But that's not true.
Let's see what they're
implying, that whoever that group was, which is a phony group if there ever was, they're implying that, well, you used to pay $8 or $25, let's say your late fee is $19-$20, and now it's going to be $8, and the taxpayer is picking up the rest of it.
That's what
I don't
sound
think
like
so.
Well, here's 30 seconds left on this clip.
The unfortunate truth is that banks are just going to find other ways to recoup this lost revenue. In the long run, it may not turn out to be as big of a win.
The new rule set to take effect in 60 days, as the White House is also taking on junk fees for sporting events and concerts, high poultry and meat prices, and internet billing practices, as the administration tries to show it is meeting consumers at their kitchen table.
Well, they did, because I don't know who is in charge of comms at the White House, but, you know, from getting the former actors who played presidents in movies to sit down with the president, and that embarrassment that we started the show off with, to this.
It looks like shrinkflation is hitting a lot of people pretty hard.
Yeah, including on Sesame Street. And Cookie Monster wasn't shy about sharing how he feels. He's not too happy that his favorite snack is shrinking. He posted on X saying, quote, "Me hate shrinkflation. Me cookies are getting smaller."
And his complaint even got the attention of the White House. In a post on X yesterday, the White House said, quote, C is for consumers getting ripped off. President Biden is calling on companies to put a stop to shrinkflation. And Democratic Senators Elizabeth Warren, Chris Van Hollen, and Sherrod Brown also responded to the post. Brown said he's fed up too, and so are the people of Ohio, saying they should get all the cookies they pay for. Van Hollen assured Cookie Monster he hates it too, and that they're working to stop the greedy corporations and, quote, no one should be getting richer off smaller cookies. And Cookie Monster's claim might be legitimate.
Do you hear yourself, woman? Do you hear what you are reporting on? You're reporting on Cookie Monster. This is insane.
Take a look at these numbers. According to a recent report from Senator Bob Casey's office, between 2019 and 2023, a family-sized pack of double-stuffed Oreos went from 1 pound and 4 ounces to 1 pound and 2.7 ounces. That's a 6% decrease in size by weight. The report says Doritos and Wheat Thins also got smaller during that same time. So I don't know what to make of this recent, like, resurgence of Sesame Street in our culture. First, it was Elmo asking everyone on Twitter, like, how are you guys doing? And everyone talked about their own personal traumas. And now Cookie Monster is getting involved to the point where the White House had to respond both times and step in.
Don't they realize that this is what the White House is doing? This is their strategy? Yes, we'll get Cookie Monster to complain about his cookies. That'll get everyone's attention. Oh, my goodness.
Where'd you get that clip? Who got that clip for you? Who was that woman?
I think that was a local NBC report.
Wow.
Yeah. You know what? We need a revolution.
Yeah.
An uprising.
In the media.
The only country that has ever really successfully done this is Haiti. They broke the shackles with France. And I got to tell you, I'm kind of digging what's going on now. This new guy, Jimmy Barbecue. Have you heard this guy?
No.
Yeah. He used to be a cop, and now he's leading the revolution. And he throws his, he gets these government people and throws them on the barbecue. It's dynamite. Yeah, listen to this.
He's been trying to bring down the government for years and could be getting close to achieving his goal. At 46 years old, gang leader Jimmy Cherizier has become one of Haiti's most feared and powerful figures. But the man who rarely appears without his automatic rifle wasn't always on the wrong side of the law. For 15 years, Cherizier worked as an officer of the Haitian National Police Force. But in 2018, he was fired over his alleged involvement in the massacre of civilians. And by 2020, he had taken the reins of a powerful criminal alliance dubbed the G9 family, with over 1,000 men under his command. Nicknamed Barbecue for his alleged tendency to burn his opponents alive, which he denies, Cherizier has repeatedly claimed he was not a gangster, but a revolutionary fighting against the elite.
We are fighting against a system that allows rich people to make millions of dollars while the rest of us sleep with the pigs.
And for Jimmy Barbecue Cherizier, no one embodies the corrupt elite more than Haitian Prime Minister Ariel Henry. In 2022, the G9 alliance blocked a major fuel terminal in the capital, piling pressure on the government. And in recent days, Cherizier's men led coordinated attacks against the airport, a police academy, and several prisons, freeing thousands of inmates. The cop-turned-gang leader is now threatening to plunge the country into civil war if the prime minister doesn't step down.
Yeah.
Well, the country's in civil war already.
Oh,
in fact, the U.S. State Department said all Americans in Haiti,
get out. Get out now. Sir Oma in the troll room said, does he have merch? No, that's a good question.
Merch. He should.
We want merch. We want Jimmy Barbecue shares yay merch. My goodness. Okay. Well, there you go. By the not everything's a scam. I noticed more and more people thinking that everything's a scam, everything's a lie.
Well, not everything's a scam. That's impossible.
I know, but people are just, now they're going all in. You got to be careful. Not everything's a lie, people.
Just the stuff the media tells you.
Yeah, that stuff's always a lie. Yes, they're just trying to sell you something. Exactly. You got anything else?
Well, I do have a... let's play this. This is a kind of an ominous clip. This is the Tower of London clip.
Tower of London? Oh.
And the Tower of London has a new Raven Master to care for a feathered flock that protects the thousand-year-old fortress. Barney Chandler will look after seven ravens that roam the grounds freely by day and are kept in cages overnight. He says legend has it that if the birds ever leave, England will collapse.
Ah!
Yeah, so we should note, have you met those birds? I have.
No, I have not.
Oh, they're dynamite.
What do they do?
They're big, giant ravens. There's about, I don't know how, there's a small flock. And they're always hanging around there, and you can go up and chat with them. And
they talk back?
They have that strange voice of a raven as opposed to a crow.
Oh.
It's kind of guttural. Hmm. And yeah.
Interesting.
And then if you make friends with them, you feed them a little bit, do something like that, then they tell every other raven in the entire world, they pass the word around,
that you're good to go. You're a good dude. Oh, interesting.
I do that with crows, too. You have to be careful. You have to be nice to crows.
Yeah, because crows can mess you up.
Ugh.
Yeah. No.
Those are the...
Yeah. Don't even say it. Worst. Don't even say it, because they'll pass it on to everybody. I was accused by someone on Reddit, that someone sent me a link, that we have never claimed that we came up with the term value for value. I don't think. It was just the system value for value. Supposedly...
You're the one who introduced it to the show in terms of the term. We've been doing it.
Yeah.
But you came out, you had the term, I don't know where you got it from, but you brought it in and we use it now constantly.
Well, people are saying that this comes from Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand. I certainly read
the
book.
Well, that would make sense from you.
I certainly read the book, but I don't remember it being value for value per se.
It's got to be a PDF. We can do a quick search.
Can someone check that out? Because I'd like to give credit where credit is due. It'd be great to... Hey, Ayn Rand said this. I didn't come up with it. It's beautiful.
No, I'm skeptical.
I'm skeptical, too. I don't think so. I don't think so. Anyway, with that, I would like to thank you for your courage. Say in the morning to you, the man who put the C in clone of Carrie. Ladies and gentlemen, say hello to my friend on the other end, the one and only Mr. John C. Devorah.
Hey, in the morning to you, Mr. Adam Curry. In the morning, all ships to sea, boots on the ground, feet in the air, subs in the water, and all the dames and knights out there.
In the morning to the trolls in the troll room. You do not want to go anywhere, trolls, because I got to count you.
Don't
there count. We go. It's getting better. We had last Thursday 1,565 listening to us live. Today, 1,586. We are moving up. Trolls hanging out. I love it. This is good news.
Getting back to normal.
Yeah. Well, and it's the season as well. You know, it's the season. And, of course, people want to hear our take on stuff. You know, I think people just want to be calmed. Like, at least I can laugh about the stuff that's going on. That's all that we really want you to do.
We'll get some big laughs tonight.
Yeah, it's going to be great. That should be interesting to see.
They're going to have to jack. If he's going to go an hour, they said, and they're betting on maybe longer.
Yeah, 69.
They're
going
to have to give him the full dose. So we're going to see the full dosed Biden, which means he'll probably scream and. At some point,
it's not the full dose. It's
I'm going to give you the whole load today.
It's the whole load.
They're going to give him the whole load.
The whole load. The whole load. There was an article. It was interesting. It was you remember that you know that mask maker lady from the CIA. The lady
the
who
disguise woman.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's great.
Yeah, she did a. Let's see if I can find it. She did a. Oh, no, I can't find it. She did a whole article in the New York Post or something, and how she fooled the president. How she fooled.
Right. Yeah. I heard about this. She put herself in some sort of one of those latex masks.
Yes. Yes.
They've, I guess, taken it to some level of unbelievable to an extreme that the public wouldn't even.
Yeah, but
doesn't want to know about.
But this was Bush Senior.
Yeah, she goes in there as I guess somebody was as Bush. Oh, she went in there with Bush Senior as the president.
No. She went in as just a different woman. She got through White House security.
Oh, right. Okay.
She got through all this stuff. And then she, and there's pictures of her sitting there with Bush Sr. in the Oval Office.
Who is this, a previous head of the CIA who should know better?
Yes. He definitely should.
But you can't know better with these disguises. And this is years ago.
I mean, this has got to be some kind of signaling to let us know that, you know, that they're using this. They've got to be using this. I mean,
yeah, with Biden.
Yeah, Joey is just.
I posted a clip recently that somebody caught of Biden scratching the back of his neck, and then the latex kind of pulled up. I don't know if it's a fake or what, but it looked pretty good. And this woman who was taking the video freaked out.
Yeah.
It's a mask. He's wearing a mask. It's not Joe.
it's unbelievable the extent to which, I mean, again, around the Hill Country, I'm hearing JFK Jr. is alive.
Oh, please.
Really? Really? Yeah. And people are very serious about this.
You know, you're the whack jobs in your area are I think,
great.
Worse than
they're great.
Mine.
They're great. No, yeah. Of course.
Well, they're definitely entertaining.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. And they like to drink. So it's fun.
And then you have to go to San Antonio to vote as a Democrat. Are you kidding me?
This is part of the joke. I just say, do not adopt to the fears and anxieties of the people around you and some of these crazy ideas. A correction. One of our producers hoaxed us in a very good way, I would say, and said the next time the show will be on a leap day will be in 2023. Well, of course, that's not possible. 2023 is not a leap year.
2023 is last year.
2033. I'm sorry. 2033.
I had nothing to do with that being hoaxed.
No, I read it on the show, and like they sent me this link, and I was like, oh man, I got hoaxed. And then I did want to read two quick notes. Jen in Indy says, in our household, we pronounce LaCroix like LaCroix. Pinkies up, John. And Lightning Maximalist says he would gladly buy the children's book for $33.33. What's
the status? Now we're getting into a discussion about this issue.
Oh, over at the publishing company?
Yeah. Jay sent you a copy of it. I don't know if you've seen it yet.
It came in this morning. I haven't seen it yet. It's a PDF. I haven't seen it.
We need to add a couple of pages so it can be 33 pages long.
Ah, now you're talking. Teach those children right.
33. That's a funny idea. Well, yes. It may come to pass as that price.
Yeah. I mean, it's good for your children.
It's a great book.
And it teaches the children values.
ABCs.
Yeah, it teaches them the ABCs. It's a fun way to learn the ABCs. I'm sure G is for Gitmo, no doubt.
Gitmo Nation.
I haven't looked at the book. It's been a long time.
Ten years.
Yeah, I was going to say, she was probably like 15 when she did that book.
I think so. Yeah, something like that.
That's fantastic. And you're going to be supporting Jay, I presume, if we put this book on sale. Or is she just getting, are you using her like a ghost writer?
No, she's running that operation. She's really good. But she, it'd be the same. The royalties, the 15%, 20% royalties will come into the show as the book goes out.
Oh, so we get a stipend. So
it's the same as any other book publishing company, okay. Basically.
All right, good. Do we get 15% of that egg book then?
Uh-huh. You mean the too many eggs.com book?
No eggs. No eggs.
Even Mimi's not getting that book. That book is running the publishing company. Period. Even Mimi doesn't get a royalty.
we run as discussed. We run this show value for value. Thank you, Ayn Rand. And that means that for the past 2.5 hours, you didn't hear any commercial interruptions. There was no creepy, native ads going on here. None of that. Well, the ones we played that are on the mainstream media, of course. And hopefully we calmed you down a bit so that you don't feel so weird about and uneasy about all the things. And tonight, you can look at the State of the Union as a comedy show. You'll be ready. Yeah. You're prepared. You'll be able to laugh, and then you'll be looking for the latex mask. It's fun for the whole family. And all we ask for in return is that you send some value back to us. And you can do that in many ways. We love what our artists do, and we always thank them. Our artists create artwork while we're doing the show. And then right when we're done, and we turn the show around pretty quickly, we like to choose a piece of art, we choose a title, and then we publish it. And we always want to give credit to the artist who did the artwork on the previous show, which was 1639, the episode number. We titled it The Pumpkin Coin. It was Nessworks, who's back. We haven't seen Nessworks with a win for a while. And no. He took a very nice, a Norton antivirus theme. And the color was kind of the same. It's No Agenda, Antivirus for Your Mind. And I think that was good. We liked it. Let me see. Was there anything else that caught our fancy? Yeah,
I got a kick out of the Happy Woman's History Month with the Rachel Levine and the Looney Tunes logo.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me see.
There wasn't really a lot to choose. We liked the pumpkin pie, but we named it that instead.
Yeah. That was nothing. Really
I liked AGI Took Human Jobs, but from comic strip blogger, but you didn't like that at all.
Let's see which one was that.
It's the robot. It's a nice AI robot.
I'm looking for it now. I don't seem to be
AGI. That's the big joke.
Is it? Oh, there you go. Yeah. It's like meh. RFK with laser eyes. No, but I did like Oprah with the burgers, but it's kind of rude.
Yeah, it's kind of
wasn't. And I think the thing with Rachel Levine, if it were the production wasn't great. I thought the Happy Women's History Month. By the way, what are people doing for Women's History Month? I haven't heard any stories. No one cares. These months, they don't care anymore. I didn't think the production was that great. And then
it didn't match the logo. Happy Women's History Month did not match the Looney Tunes theme.
No, it wasn't.
It should have been an old kind of a Looney Tunes logo around there. Some.
Well, thank you very much, Nessworks, for bringing us the artwork for episode 1639. Thank you to all of the artists, everybody who supplies us with clips, boots on the ground, intel, important intel, people who run servers, and you are all producers. We have no listeners. We have no audience. We just have producers, and we love to thank our producers. Just like Hollywood, we thank our executive and associate executive producers up front. Did you hear that... that girl got convicted of on the Rust set.
The armorer.
So Alex Baldwin is next.
Yeah, he may get convicted.
Oh man.
He deserves it. I mean, he's the one who had the gun in his hand without checking it, and then he pulls the trigger. Or it pulled itself somehow. That's
magic.
What he claims.
It was magic. It's magic.
And he's been in many, hundreds of, situations where he had to use a gun.
Yeah.
So he knew the rules. And like he's never held a gun in his life.
I have a clip actually. There's something interesting in this that is worth listening to. You want to hear it?
Yeah.
Find the defendant, Anna Gutierrez, guilty of involuntary manslaughter as charged in count one.
The armorer charged with ensuring on-set gun safety in the Hollywood production of Rust was immediately placed into the custody of deputies. Jurors convinced by the prosecution's case that the live rounds that ended up in actor and executive producer Alec Baldwin's gun, fatally shooting cinematographer Helena Hutchins, got there due to Hannah Gutierrez Reed's failure to observe safety protocols. No. Prosecutor Carrie Morrissey presented evidence that Gutierrez Reed unknowingly brought the live rounds on set, and that the 12 days before the accident, in which they slowly spread across the set, should have been ample time to perform the routine checks that would have allowed her to realize this was live ammunition. The 26-year-old's lawyer said that she would be appealing the verdict, arguing that management had shown negligence in giving her two jobs, a props assistant and an armorer responsible for more than 20 firearms.
Management was responsible for safety failures and not Hannah. Hannah is a scapegoat for all the management failures. They do hope she gets convicted, so they're all exonerated. They can move forward. They can finish that movie like Mr. Sousa said they did and make their money.
No date has been set for sentencing, but it's a charge that carries up to 18 months in prison and a $5,000 fine. The jury found her not guilty of an evidence tampering charge. Alec Baldwin, who pulled the trigger, will be tried for manslaughter in July.
That was interesting, that blaming the production company.
You got to point the finger at somebody. It's not your fault that you took a gun, loaded gun, pointed it at a cinematographer and pulled the trigger. What was the point?
Yeah. Anyway, we will never go to court with our executive producers, ever, or associate executive producers, because you fund the operation, and as long as you don't point a gun at us, we're good. Even then, I'm still kind of okay with it. So we kick it off by thanking our, this is interesting, Sir B of the Chattanoochee, who comes in from Alpharetta, Georgia with $400, big yellow box here, so there's a birthday involved. And he says, John and Adam, thank you. I am headed to Vegas and plan to win this donation value back at the tables. So in essence, it's free money. All right. Please send us a boots on the ground of your TSA experience. Also, Adam, my wife and I are going to Amsterdam for 4 days in April. I would love to get your number one don't miss recommendation. Go to the Bulldog, smoke a joint. John, stay grumpy, my friend. What do people think of you? Love and light, Sir B, birthday mention. Sir B of the Chattanoochee wishing his three human resources a happy birthday. Danny, March 11th. Eliza, March 15th. And Nico, March 16th. And a shout out to my smoking hot wife for her consistency. So done. Love and light, he says, Sir B. All right. Thank you very much, brother.
So now we have Kyle in Wisconsin.
This was an interesting note.
Yeah, well, he's been sending these kinds of cryptic notes for about 6 months. Usually there's a dollar in them, but this time there's 400.
Wow.
Cash.
Wow.
And this is Kyle from Wisconsin. He says, John, Adam, what her happened? WP. No phone, no money, no home. I'm the joke? ? Will I be left to toil in my depths? Am I prison bound? I am not evil. EVOL. Sincerely, Kyle.
All right.
No internet, says.
Wow. That's an interesting.
So anyway, thank you, Kyle, for the donations.
Yes, we appreciate
it. Very
that.
Big deal, and we appreciate it.
Yeah, and if you have a question, you can, if you have internet, adam@curry.com.
adam@curry.com.
That's right. Then we move on to Digi, who comes in with 34567 from Indianapolis, Indiana. From Digi, he's a blind listener and a dude named Ben. And I would say, just an FYI, Digi, the Podverse app, I didn't promote an app today, but the Podverse app.
No, you didn't.
No, I didn't. The Podverse app has, they did a lot of work specifically for, what's it called?
I don't know.
Yeah, you know, there's a term for it, for not assistance, it's something with an A. It's, you know, for blind people. Blind Ben. I can't remember the term. There's a term
for
it.
Yeah, there's a term.
There's like a politically correct term for it.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things that, that you know, your screen reader will work. You know, there's I can't. Accessibility. Thank you, Midas. That's it. Accessibility.
Bingo.
There you go. So that would be a great app for you to use. Oh, and I needed to mention that one of the biggest podcasting hosts in the world, Spreaker, They have now joined the podcasting 2.0 revolution. They're using Podping, which means if you listen to a podcast that hosts on Spreaker, just like the No Agenda Show, it will update within 90 seconds of publishing. No more do you have to wait for 45 minutes.
I've never heard
minutes.
Of this operation. What's their name? Spreaker?
Spreaker. Oh, they're big. Oh, yeah. They have a lot of
Are they as big as Podbean?
I think they're bigger than Podbean.
Huh.
Yeah, they have 350,000 feeds, I believe. It's pretty big.
Holy wow.
So if you want to see that work, go to podping.watch. It's crazy to see all these things updating in real time. Thanks, Digi.
Podping.watch,
yes.
Greb Scott's up with he's in Oceanside, California.
Yeah, he does our chapters.
Yeah, he's probably changing something as we speak. 333.34. And he says, anonymous from Dreb Scott,
okay.
Archduke, location at large. No jingles, no karma. Late birthday shout out to myself, March 4th.
And I'm going to give him a biscuit.
They always give me a biscuit on my birthday.
He deserves a biscuit.
Thank you, brother. Keith Yates is in Haltom City, Texas, 263.22. Interesting number. Thank you very much. Please de-douche me.
You've been de-douched.
Jeffrey Gerlach in Evergreen, Colorado, 24697. Switcheroo! This is for my son, Sir William Gerlach, with a request for a name change to Sir Wiley Arts. And please check out his art at Wiley Arts, WileyArts.com. And his Insta is Wiley Arts, at Wiley Arts. It's astounding how proud I am of my son.
Okay, so this...
Love you, mean it. I hope you win.
Yes, thank you. So this means we will be crediting this to Sir Wiley Arts.
I would assume so.
Okay, good. I got it. Got it. I'll take the blue one, and I'll skip over the next one. This is James Story from Lower Hutt, New Zealand.
Hutt.
200. Dear John and Adam, please find attached my donation of $200, which finally makes me eligible for knighthood. The New Zealand dollar exchange rate sucks right now, and it's less than you deserve, but I'm truly grateful for your show. And, of course, we honor your dollary dues. May I humbly request brisket and bourbon at the round table and an R2-D2 karma? Well, of course you can. Regards to you both. James Story. We'll see you at the round table momentarily, James.
You've got karma.
I wonder if that 200 in, I will look this up, in New Zealand dollars, because he gave me in dollars. So if we translate that to New Zealand dollar reduce, I wonder if that
$1.50
pushes him up a notch.
Then the Lupakin's up. Oh, I see what you're saying. He might be, you mean he might be.
Exec.
Yeah. I don't know.
Possible. There are systems online to tell us. Linda Lupatkin in Lakewood, Colorado. There she is at $200. She says she needs jobs, Carmen, and wants to tell us that for a competitive edge, go to imagemakersinc.com for all your executive resume and job search needs. That's imagemakersinc.com. Or just find Linda Lupatkin, Duchess of Jobs and Writer of Resumes, on the producer's list.
Yeah. Jobs, 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 and jobs. Let's vote for jobs. You thought karma.
And that concludes our executive and associate executive producers for episode 1640 of the best podcast in the universe. We appreciate your contributions, and you not only get the perfect value of the show, but with these comes credits that are valuable. First of all, they're also accepted anywhere, even in a courtroom. If you're being sued for a manslaughter, you will still be accredited as an executive producer of the manslaughter organization or the associate executive producer, or you can just use it on your resume and look cool, put on your LinkedIn profile, on your X profile, on your Insta, or go ahead and open up a profile at imdb.com, because these credits are real and accepted by Hollywood. We thank you very much. We'll be thanking a whole bunch of people now as John takes us through to the 50s.
Yes, indeed. I was looking up the New Zealand dollars. Starting with Brian McIver in Portage. Question one way or the other. Michigan 16867, which, by the way, is a double boobs donation.
Whoa, interesting.
prostetnik of the Grebulons in Netanya, Illinois, 111.11. Prostetnik's dad introduced Prostetnik to the show. I hated it, he says, or she says, I don't know.
Okay.
Ian Julevich in Wheatland, Wyoming, 10534. That's a lagging Joe Rogan donation.
And
Leroy Pacheco,
it said please de-douche. Please de-douche there. So
you've been de-douched.
Leroy Pacheco. It's got to be Pacheco. In Santa Fe, New Mexico, 100. I can tell this is going to be a tough read the whole way through.
Yeah, I can tell.
Kelly Spongberg in Rocky Mountain House in Alberta, Canada, 100. No jingles, no karma. Yeah, well, that's for sure. Kevin McLaughlin comes up. There he is from Concord, North Carolina, 8008. Ladies, please protect your rack. Sir Labrat of Kinshasa, Kansasville, Wisconsin, 7330. That's a birthday for his brother.
And Scott Merrill. He wants a biscuit.
They always give me a biscuit on my birthday.
We do biscuits.
Scott Merrill in Vancouver, Washington, 6991. Used to be in Beaverton. Gergana Yankova in Chesham.
Oh my God, man.
UK, 6789. Grayson Insurance. Grayson Insurance in Aurora, Colorado. Check them out, 6006. Lucid Map in Bristol, Tennessee, 5833. Les Tarkowski in Kingman, Arizona, 58. James Carter in Spicewood, Texas, 5798.
He says, please use this donation to bring more Africa clips to the show. Okay. You got to donate more for that, man. We lose too many people.
Yeah, it's got to be you have to be executive producer to get that request.
We lose people over Africa clips.
Sir Tooth Fairy in Valparaiso, Indiana, 5510. Sir Tom Dari, our buddy in DeForest, Wisconsin, 5510. Troy Funderburg in Missoula, Montana, 55. Sir John in Heber Springs, Arkansas, 5317. Michael Gates, 5280. Julie McNeil in St. Gabriel, Louisiana, 5272. Take a look at that note. Andrew Wimster in Munich, Deutschland, or München as it should be pronounced, 5272. John Pulsing in Chanhassen, Minnesota, 5272. John P. Belton in Asbury, New Jersey, 5272. Our one sad puppy donation, which is going to continue for a while. James Powers, 5272. I'm guessing these are all $50 donations that have been up.
They've paid the fee. Thank you. We appreciate that.
Stephen Crummy in El Cajon, 5272. Anonymous in Clifton, New Jersey, 5271. How that happens, I don't know. Anonymous cop in Redwood City, California, 5150. Josiah Thomas in Ankeny, Iowa, 51. Franklin Monterosa in Dodge City, Kansas, 51. Travis Harrington in Sterling, Ontario, Canada, 5005. Needs a de-douching.
You've been de-douched.
He says, cheers from Soviet-occupied Kanakistan. And now we have the $50 donors. I'll just go through them, one name and location, starting with Lynn Malinowski in Stafford, Virginia, Cody Dowd in Corpus Christi, Texas, Michael Labar in Williamston, Michigan, Alex Zavala in Kyle, Texas, Chris Ariscog in Charlotte, North Carolina, David Asari in West Hollywood, Jonathan Ferris in Liberal, Kansas, Ryan Tiernan in North Providence, Rhode Island, Person of Merit Comics in Columbus, Ohio, Chris Palmos in Thomasburg, Ontario. A lot of 50s today, I have to say. Robertson Home in Flint, Michigan. Stephen Ray in Spokane, Washington. Edward Missouri, Sir Edward in Memphis, Tennessee. Justin Cruz in Tehachapi. Lisa Piles in South Lake, Texas. Ray Howard in Kremling, Colorado. Jason DeLuzio in Miami Beach. Carrie Jackson in Watertown, Tennessee. Brian Watson in Raleigh, North Carolina. Sir Brian. Kelly Hubbard in Plymouth, Minnesota. Tracy Sullivan in Tinley Park, Illinois. Brett Farrell, who I believe is in New York City. Walker Phillips in San Rafael, California. Alex Salashower, something like that, in Shaker Heights, Ohio. Robert Flurry in Birmingham, Alabama. And last but not least, in Holland, Dennis Reichel in Hoogzand.
Dennis Reichel?
Hoogzand.
Dennis Reichel in Hoge Zand.
Hoge Zand?
Hoge Zand.
Hoge Zand.
Which means high sand.
Well, it also is a sad puppy donation. I want to thank him for that.
And thank you all so much. I really, it's heartwarming to see all the $50 donations. You took the sad puppy to heart. That's appreciated. We have almost 1 million people who listen to the show on a monthly basis. So it's nice to see some of you coming in and supporting us with the treasure. Time, talent, and treasure here for the best podcast in the universe. It's worth it. It's worth it. It's value for value. And of course, we always thank people who come in under 50. We don't read those names for reasons of anonymity. $49.99 is a favorite. And big thanks to everyone who signed up or is currently on a sustaining donation. It can be any amount you want. The typical is 33.33 or 11.11 or 12.12. These are all great numbers, and just having those helps us through the slower times. We appreciate it. Thank you all for supporting the No Agenda Show. Thank you to our executive and associate executive producers for helping us here for 1640.
Our formula is this. We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
To become a producer, go to noagendadonations.com. And we always love congratulating our birthday babies. Christopher DeBaker celebrated on the 4th of March. So did Dred Scott. Sir Brian with an I celebrated last Tuesday. Hello, Sir Brian with an I. There you are. Sir Labrat of Kinshasa celebrates on the 9th. And Sir B of the Chattahoochee wishes his three human resources a happy birthday. It's Danny on March 11th, Eliza or Eliza March 15th, and Nico on March 16th. And we say happy birthday from everybody here, the best podcast in the universe. One night. Oops. Whoa, stop, stop. I'm out of control. One night today. Finally, we have a night on deck.
Ah, here we go.
That's a good blade. We'll take that one. All right, James Story, pop on up, sir. Thank you very much for your continued donations. The amount, aggregate $1,000. That brings you up to knighthood. And I'm very proud to bring you up here on the podium and pronounce thee as Sir James Story, Knight of the No Agenda Roundtable. For you, sir, hookers and blow, rent boys and Chardonnay by request, brisket and bourbon. Also, in case you want to try it out, we got some harlots and Haldol. We have pepperoni rolls and pale ales. Beer and blunts. We got some cowgirls and coffin varnish, sparkling cider and escorts, ginger ale and gerbils. We got fresh milk and pablum, but I'm sure you like, there it is, the mutton and mead. Thank you very much, sir. It's good to have a night back on table. Go to noagendarings.com. You can look at the handsome rings that are appropriate for knights and for dames, and give us your address where we can send it off to along with your ring size. There's a ring sizing guide there on the website, and it comes with your certificate of authenticity and the wax, because it's a signet ring, your wax, to seal your important correspondence. We always love that. We love receiving those. And thank you and for joining the Knights of the No Agenda Roundtable.
No Agenda Meetups.
Well, people are really enjoying enjoying the connection that they get at No Agenda Meetups. It is the perfect companion to the show. You can't just listen and not hook up with your Gitmo Nation family. A lot of people create groups on Telegram, and of course there's Mastodon where people congregate. But really going to a meetup, that will really complete your, it'll complete your life, if I can be honest about it. Woo! Connection is protection, and the Tulsa No Agenda Meetup from March proves it.
In the morning, this is Hallie in Tulsa. John and Adam, I love you so much.
No, we
all done changed my life.
This is Aaron from Norman in the morning at night.
Hey guys, thanks so much. You broke my wife's brain with that moon landing video. Thanks, John. Great newsletters. Keep it up.
In the morning, guys. This is Mark from right here in Tulsa, where conspiracy theories are awesome, but you guys are way more awesomer.
Hey, John and Adam. Thank you so much for the No Agenda meetups. They're amazing. I've heard so many interesting things tonight. Oh, sorry, I got to order. I'm going to have a slave stew. No bugs? No, without, please. Thank you.
In the morning from Tulsa, this is Gavino. Glad to see everybody here. I don't know what else to say.
This is Sonia from Tulsa, having another fun time at the meetup. And I'm here to remind you to not be a douchebag.
100%.
Oh, get my homo where the wind comes. Sweeping down the plains. Yeah!
Now, who wouldn't want to be a part of that? That's a crew right there, man. You meet children from other lands at these meetups. Here's the new Detroit Southern Pacific. Let me see. What is this? Let me make sure I get it right. The new Detroit Southern Pacific San Francisco meetup.
In the morning, this is Sir Recalcitrant Crazy Steve II at the new Detroit meetup. The pool man says World War III will be starting soon.
Sir Montauk here, live and in person.
This is the Count of SF here, host of the Southern Pacific New Detroit meetup 2.0. I hope everyone's having a good time. Not too many people showed up, but the rain is coming down, so no surprise there. Here we go.
Sir Rishmeister.
And Adam and John.
In the morning.
Big, small, doesn't matter. It's always a good time to be had at the No Agenda Meetups. Go to noagendameetups.com. Connection is protection. You cannot spell community without unity. And if you can't find one near you, start one yourself. It's easy and always fun.
Sometimes you want to go hang out with all the nights and days. You want to be where you want me. Triggered on hell. You wanna be where everybody feels the same.
And for some reason, I don't know why, I forgot to promote the meetups that are happening today. Let me do it now. The Northern Wake Spring Cleaning Soiree at 6 o'clock. That's at Hoppy Endings in Raleigh, North Carolina. On Saturday, we have the Beef Eaters Anonymous. That'll be at noon. That's in the UK at the Brass Rail in London. Sir Paul, the trusted advisor, organizing that. So get out there, you Brits. It says San Antonio March Meetup, now with 50% more Nat Pops, 1 o'clock on Saturday at Second Pitch Beer Company in San Antone. We have the South Jersey meetup taking place. It's the World War III watch party at Miller's Ale House in Mount Laurel Township, New Jersey. Brett hosting that for you. Michigan Local 1 pre-St. Patty's meetup. That's right, St. Patty's is on the way. 2 o'clock at Fillmore 13 Brewery in Pontiac, Michigan. The Tiny Amygdala of Anchorage will be meeting Daylight Savings Time Protest. That'll be on Saturday, 2 o'clock Alaska time. Sir Lane's house in Anchorage. That should be fun at his house. The meetup, Zaylont, number one, Connection is Protection. Café Bommelmarkt, 85, Middelburg, the Netherlands. Iris, soon to be Dame of the Goo Goo Dolls, is hosting that. So definitely, you Gouda heads, head over there. And our next show day, Sunday, Albuquerque, 505 at 1 o'clock at Urban 360 Pizza. Sir Jeff Tuhig will be hosting that in Albuquerque, New Mexico. The Charleston No Agenda live stream listen party. That'll be fun. 2 o'clock at Charleston's Distilling Company, Johns Island, South Carolina on Sunday. And finally, the Indy No Agenda Tribal Mad March meetup, 3 o'clock Eastern, Prodigy Burger Bar, Indianapolis, Indiana. Sir Mark and Dame Maria of the Greenwood, of course, hosting that. Those of you know Agenda Meetups, thank you very much. And now it's time for ISOs.
Wow.
I know.
That's a different segue.
I know. I said, because normally I do the jingle and I screwed it up.
Time for ISOs.
Time for ISOs. I'll start with mine. How does that sound?
Sounds good to me.
Oh, I got a whole bunch of them here.
A bunch.
I got a bunch. I don't know if they're any good. If any good. Okay, here we go. Number one.
Big D Energy.
Big D Energy. You liked it when it was in the clip. Not so great as an ISO, I can tell.
Shade all the way down.
No, I don't like that one either.
The American people are tired of being played for suckers.
No. This one.
That's it. No other reason. No agenda.
Barely hear it.
No, this one.
Me hate shrinkflation.
That's the only one I think is possibly useful.
All right, I got four. Here we go.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
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 Always a winner.
I like that one, yes.
Keep going.
Keep going. Keep going, you dummies.
I like that one a lot.
I like that one the most. So cute.
It was so cute.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dershowitz.
We cannot trust the media.
Ooh, that's tight.
I came loaded for bear.
You did.
Keep going, you dummies.
I think that's the best one.
Yeah, it's Trump. Actually,
I think that's the best one. Yeah. All right, keep going. Keep going, you dummies.
Good news.
Time for good news, as we'd like to end our show with some good news so you can go into the weekend, in this case, into Friday, into the State of the Union, into everything, just feeling good about yourself, feeling good about life, feeling good about people helping each other, and some good news as John brings the good news to you.
This is about Kevin Bacon the Pig.
In Kenosha County, a local family had an unexpected visitor, one that took them on the adventure of a lifetime.
Our Jeffrey Zimpani introduces us to a 450-pound pig from Brighton, and the pig, hand of God, is named Kevin Bacon.
Kevin Bacon is a gentle giant. He's a 450-pound pig who loves taking walks, meeting new people, and more than anything, eating donuts. Brighton resident Jake Mulgard was home Friday night when his wife discovered something unusual.
Friday night around 8 o'clock, I'm watching TV and my wife comes in the room and says, Jake, I think there's a pig on our driveway camera. And I'm like, are you serious?
Kevin Bacon was standing at their back door. He wandered from a nearby hobby farm and wanted to say hello. Mulgard made a few phone calls and found his owner, who was out of town for the weekend.
Yeah, that's definitely my pig. Is he? He's a big black pig. I said, yeah. He's like, yeah, his name is Kevin Bacon. And he's actually a little lonely, so he's probably just looking for company.
With some assistance from the Kenosha Sheriff's Department, the Mulgard family brought Kevin home, a one-mile walk that took an incredible 2.5 hours. At one point, Jake's daughter, Chloe, had to climb on Kevin's back to get him going.
Aww.
The owner said that if he stops on you, you can jump on his back, and he likes to run at that point.
The Mulgards lured Kevin home with Oreo cookies and anything else they found in the fridge. Not only did they get him back home, they made a friend for life.
They all wanted to adopt him immediately, and I said, we don't have a place to put a 450-pound pig, but they fell in love with him right away.
Hey, good boy. Here we have Kevin back home safe and sound, maybe a little tuckered out from his one-mile walk, but he appears to be in good spirits. In Kenosha, Jeffrey Zampanti, TMJ4 News.
Ah, what a great story. I really like that.
The video of the little girl riding the pig was the best part of it. It's quite funny.
I'll bet.
Good news of the day. Good news on NA. What has Mimi given John to play today?
There you go. Good news. We do it every single show. And that wraps up another more than 3 hours of deconstruction just for your listening pleasure. We have, after a two-year hiatus, coming up next on noagendastream.com and all the modern podcast apps, Unfiltered Show. They're back. Remember them?
Are they back? I thought the two of them had a falling out.
Apparently, two-year hiatus. They're back. The Season of Information Control is the title of their episode. Well, I'm happy to see these guys back and back on the stream. It's beautiful.
It's both of them, not just one.
I think so. We'll find out. I haven't heard it. End of show mixes. Classic from Sir TJ the Wrathful with the Dorful dudes and dudettes. Little Brandon mix for you. We also have the Clip Collector with an end of show mix, and Sound Guy Steve with a great little ditty that'll just get you popping into your Thursday night. Coming to you from the heart of the Texas Hill Country here in FEMA Region Number 6. In the morning, everybody. I'm Adam Curry.
And from Northern Silicon Valley, we have a shout-out for Aichi Kitagawa, who somehow I missed on the list. I'm John C. Dvorak.
We return on Sunday to talk about your State of the Union and the state of the world right here on No Agenda. Remember us at noagendadonations.com. Till then, adios, mofos, a hooey hooey and such.
We don't talk about Brandon. We don't talk about Brandon. It was election time. Economy was booming and there wasn't a cloud in the sky.
Clouds loud in the sky.
Brandon walks in scandal. It begins.
It's science.
You telling the star your mind.
Sorry, my son, go on.
Brandon says 6 feet apart.
That's what they tell us.
Wear a mask alone in your car.
That's freaking crazy.
No question what the experts say.
Just get back to you, slaves.
We don't talk about Brandon. No, we don't talk about Brandon.
Obvious to see Brandon stuttering or stumbling. I can't always hear him sort of muttering and mumbling. I associate him with the sound of
Violet, go, you know the thing.
He takes heavy sniffs of the kids, it's a frightening. Always fall asleep while he's supposed to be speaking. Grappling with words that no one understands.
A lot of jokes, think about it.
A 4-year term creeps on the house. Wants to build back.
A lot of jokes, think about it.
Somebody else. But the one good thing we salvage from this mess is all the memes about Brandon and Nixon. All the memes
it's been 2 years.
They say it's for your health.
What have we got to show?
Pfizer's got the wealth.
Economy's crap. You know who we can thank if this is normal now.
We are gonna need some serious help.
But who can save us?
I don't know, buddy, but I'm really scared.
Could the government help?
Hey, yeah, they could just print up some more money.
Isn't that inflation?
Nah, it's just paper.
Cool, thanks, Brandon.
We want us 6 feet in the ground.
Not what they tell us.
Double mask up in your car.
That's freaking crazy.
Triple jab right in your arm.
How am I still possible?
Come on, man.
We all talk about Brandon and
go, Brandon, I agree.
Consciousness itself is a diaphragm or a drum. Bass notes that it, and that drum grows when it's stretched. Notes that, and when it's stretched and it grows, it's able to interpret bass notes. Notes that it did not have before because it wasn't as wide. So the aperture of your consciousness can be stretched and you will see things that other people will not see. The amygdala is giving you a barometric number about how afraid you are. And so when you're in a certain situation, you're one of the many jobs that your amygdala has is to give you constant feedback about how much you're freaking the fuck out right now. If too much information comes in, the amygdala knows that you as the pilot are going to lose your shit and you're going to black out.
Breaking news of the day.
President Biden.
Donald Trump.
Tucker Carlson.
Biden.
President Biden.
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 Joe Biden.
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 Biden. Biden.
Trump.
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 Brandon.
Trump.
Trump.
Donald Trump.
Vladimir Putin.
Tucker.
Tucker Putin.
Tucker Carlson.
Tucker Carlson.
Do you follow me?
Donald Trump.
President Biden.
Trump's Biden.
Elon Musk.
Tucker Putin.
Tucker.
Ukraine.
Russia.
Ukraine.
Michelle Obama.
Ukraine.
Twitter.
Inflation.
I guess the breaking news is this.
Peace in Ukraine.
2-year anniversary of Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
Another American citizen is in custody in Russia. Gaza.
Israel. A war in Ukraine.
The Israel-Hamas war.
Israel and Hamas.
Barack Obama. President Biden.
Could it be Trump?
Donald Trump.
Joe Biden.
Democracy.
Donald Trump.
President Biden.
Trump.
Joe Biden.
Joe Biden.
Taylor Swift.
Joe Biden.
Donald Trump.
Donald Trump.
Michelle Obama.
Trump.
Pathological.
Donald Trump.
Team Trump.
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 Joe Biden.
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 Biden. Biden.
Donald Trump.
That is crazy.
This is entertaining.
Dvorak.org/NA
Keep going, you dummies.